I don't know why I bring all these papers. I never look at them.
Oh, you're giving numbers. I do. I go, oh. Sorry for that. Did you really say that?
I just say whatever they write down for me.
That's why you're guessing.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Sunday, January 3rd, 2020. Thank you for joining me today. Probably a longer show, so buckle in. It'll probably a three-hour tour, as Eerie Fury likes to say in the chat. There's plenty to get into, far too much to talk about today that I'm going to have to talk about in days to come, but we're going to talk especially about the idea of what I coined as the vaccine mix and match, a wildly unscientific, but perfectly for COVID-19, right? Nothing seems to be scientific in all of this, wildly unscientific, just argument based on the concept that you're just so in danger that we need to take this incredibly non-research topic, such as saying, well, we'll just give you another type of vaccine after you come back for your second shot because we're short. So we're just going to give you that other kind, even though we haven't tested that. And they're not even the same kind. They're made by different companies. But who cares? Because we just want you to get the vaccine. It's all for your safety, though. We'll talk about that today, as well as the fact that hundreds of Israelis come down with COVID after getting the vaccine. Now, the argument is that it just was caught after the fact because it's impossible to happen. Still an interesting topic to get into. We're also going to talk about, in a general sense, the politics of medicine today and all of the same things we're always diving into. But one real important topic, which will be towards the end, so I strongly suggest that you stay with us till the end, in regard to masks. Specifically, two huge topics, one directly from the WHO, another follow-up from Swiss policy research, both of which confirm everything we've been saying from the very beginning. Interesting. Now, I want to make sure everybody knows that I have an interview scheduled for this Wednesday, thanks to Spiro, with James Lyon Wheeler, who is somebody who I was pointing to the moment that he started speaking out, and I'm excited to talk with him. Somebody who has been calling this stuff out from the beginning, they ignored him, and I think it's very clear that what he's saying is correct. He's one of the individuals talking about the unsafe isotopes, the idea of the PEG and all these different problems that they've been screaming about, warning about, and they didn't care. Now, that and a lot of other things to get into, but I wanted to make a quick mention today before we dive into it that it's interesting how people will try to attack this show for no reason. You know, they have reasons, but on the surface, well, really no discernible reason, such as saying that because I'm talking about things that are not literally from this last 24 hours, that I'm somehow deceiving everybody, except that there's dates posted and I always point to when they come from. And of course, I point to lots of information from previous times that make the point of today. But, you know, you'd think that would be really simple, but not for people who are just looking for anything they can to disparage people that are actually telling you the truth. And this is exactly why we are still being censored on all of these different platforms. Now, to start off today, very quickly want to make a point here that's going to be, this is actually a really big deal. And this is not even just about me. This is something that Twitter's been doing. And interestingly enough, somebody from Media Monarchy just reached out to me today in solidarity saying he's seeing the exact same thing. It's really crazy to see. Now, here's what I said. This is what Ignitus said, this interesting, fantastic profile that you should all be following that just seemed to pick right where I left off. Hey, Twitter, would you care to explain why you deleted T-Lab's account without any explanation and no email, which is a flagrant violation of your own rules, then deleted another T-Lab account instantly, even though it was started by somebody else, which I already showed you guys in a previous stream. I don't know why I'm gone or what happened. So I said, yeah, I'll just start another account like seemingly everybody does, but not me. But the point was, and I followed up saying, are you not required to notify an account that has been suspended per your own terms of service on Twitter? No reasonable attempt was made, as he says right here, reasonable efforts to notify you by email and so on. They just skipped that step. Now, what I want to show you really quickly before I show you the point is, again, what my account, as you can see here, that I still have open that's now zeroed out and gone. What was previously there, which was right up here below these tweets, were the discussions of the Nashville nurse who was claiming that she got Bell's palsy from the vaccine. So the only thing that was deleted. So we have to assume that that was why my channel was removed, which is the point we're making today. The only thing left in regard to that, which is funny, they seem to blew out, which is, I'm the only one that can see this, so I don't know why, the image that says exactly, interestingly, what this other one says. Funny how that, what a coincidence, right? Where it says, talk, but don't actually say anything. That's what that actually said. But the tweet, as you can see, says, I want to point out some that I've seen numerous prominent accounts share this, you know, the point saying, and not calling them out because I don't want anybody to be censored, but simply going, look, you're allowing people to post this video, comment on it with no context, and yet I give an objective report saying this is what she's claiming, research it for yourself, and I get removed. Every other discussion anywhere on this account of the Nashville bombing in regard, or excuse me, of course, weirdly connected, you know, timing-wise anyway, any discussion of the Nashville nurse who said she got Bell's palsy from the vaccine, it's gone. They deleted all of them. So I think it's clear that that was at least the catalyst for why they decided to remove this account. Okay, so here's the point. And this is a really big deal. This is what Marshall, who was one of our mods, saw. When he got his accounts temporarily suspended for the same exact video. Nashville nurse. Right? Now, these are all the ones that I got deleted too. Just a simple link to my website. Not even saying anything. Just all you can see right there with a link to the website. That was what they hit me for. Or at least what they deleted. Here's what they say to Marshall. Twitter is required by German law to provide notice to users who are reported by people from Germany via the Network Enforcement Act reporting flow. Interesting how Americans are now being told, you know, that somebody in Germany can cite a German law and your account, your video or account gets removed in the U.S., that's quite interesting. But it says, we have received a complaint regarding your account for this post. For Nashville nurse claims COVID vaccine gave her Bell's palsy, Nashville bombing, 5G connection. No, the Nashville bombing, 5G connection. And I'm not, again, the claim was that that's what the media was saying, not me. Here's what it says. We have investigated the reported content and have found that it is not subject to removal under Twitter rules. Or German law. Accordingly, we have not taken any action as a result of this specific report. Excuse me? Anybody out there? I mean, guys, I don't have the account that I had. I don't have the reach. I would love to make this a gigantic deal on Twitter. So I need your help to do that. And again, this is not about me or even reinstating my account. It's about making sure that people realize that Twitter is just completely a government entity. That is why, on a different point that people are ridiculously claiming in chats and different things, that talking about censorship, the concept of censorship applies to government censorship. You cannot come in my front door and scream and claim that you have a right to do so. It's my house, right? In the sense of the government, when that is when this applies. That's why the argument about a private company, they always push in your face when this happens. But the problem is we know that's not true. YouTube, Google, Facebook, Twitter, all of them have overt ties to government influence and basically control. We all know that today. So the reality is that these are government platforms and they are censoring, and that's the point. Somebody's trying to attack me for saying that I'm being inconsistent about my claims. No, very damn consistent. It's incredible to me that this is what they're stating, that what they removed my account for is stated as not being a violation. Please, anybody out there, help me get this out to people. Help me talk about the reality that they don't care about their rules and that they're just arbitrarily censoring people that they don't like, don't agree with, or trying to cover up for the government masters for which they serve. Now look, that is everywhere. It's not a secret. We know this. We all know it. But this is a really obvious example of how they're getting caught doing it in real time because of how aggressively they're trying to push this narrative. That needs to tell you something, right? Take away from this point, not that I'm vindicated. Take away from this the point that they are aggressive. They're desperate. If they're willing to do this so flagrantly in a way that exposes their hand to a lot of people, realize what that shows you. Realize how desperate they really are to hide the truth from you. Now, on a couple more points to open up, I want to make sure you guys know Robert just put out a great new video, a really, really good one, actually, just really breaking down information that you people might not know. You know, the ins and outs of what's really going on here that is hidden by the mainstream media. Foreign Policy with Robert Inlakesh. Hashtag FPWRI, Israel 2020 strikes Iran, Iraq, Syria, Gaza. Great video. I believe it was only about 20 minutes. Highly worth your time. As well as a great interview with Dabu, which was for my Rockfin exclusive. I highly recommend you listen to this. We talk about some really contentious topics that you wouldn't be able to talk about on most other platforms. And it's entitled for the podcast, False Flags, PSYOPs, and Social Engineering in the Age of COVID-19. Dabu is someone who's been doing this longer than most anybody else you can point to. Very, very much worth your time. And finally, I want to make sure that we... as I was trying to remember what the tab actually says while it's freezing on me. I'm remembering one of the opening points here. But anyway, just so we're clear... all of these things are interviews that are up right now so you guys can watch for yourself that I really hope you will take the time to watch. I'm trying to do as many interviews as I can around the side of the show, but I'll tell you, this COVID-19 discussion is really, really taking up all of the time. You know what I'm going to do while this is circling? Give it a second. I'm going to, and I have yet to figure out why this happens every day to me and never a single, not a one moment outside of the day other than when I'm live. You know, just a coincidence, I'm sure. But let's play... since we were just talking about James, let's play a little clip of James here, which will be very relevant to the discussion we're going to get into in regard to vaccines. Or, how about Larry, since that doesn't seem to come up? Jeez.
Autoimmune diseases are exponentially rising, and we are finding that the viruses and the bacteria that we're injecting into the body, along with the adjuvants, create something called molecular mimicry. Which means the body sees those viruses thinking that it's foreign, but actually finds pieces of those viruses that match pieces of the self. And the immune system doesn't differentiate between what it's been told to reject and itself. So it will turn the immune system on itself, leading to an autoimmune condition. We know this about hepatitis B. We know it about the Gardasil vaccine, and we know it about the flu vaccine. And we continue to say unequivocally that the vaccines have been studied effectively. You heard earlier that there's no real concern about aluminum because it's such a small amount, and so it really shouldn't matter. But the kind of aluminum that we put into vaccines is a different kind of aluminum that we see environmentally. This is called a nanoparticle, and nanoparticles bind really tightly to the bacteria antigens, the virus antigens, the food protein antigens, and any other contaminants that are in the vaccines that we may not know about. And we know that the biochemical properties of nanoparticles is that they are capable of entering the brain. And so...
here was the other part we were getting to. I just hope you guys know I am showing outstanding restraint by not literally throwing my computer into the wall when you don't understand how frustrating this is for me that keeps happening, but let's not waste any more time. The greater reset, again, was the last opening point. Remember this is happening. Remember that you guys need to check this out, follow what's happening, and this will be done side by side with the Great Reset presentation. Derek is the one leading this charge, and it's very much worth your time as well. Now, starting off, slowly, piece by piece, going through this stuff. Let me close this actual other tab here, just in case that's what's freezing everything up. While giving Americans $600, which, by the way, is, as we should know, how this has come, you know, I mean, I guess there's still discussions, but it's boiling down to essentially, but the point was $600, $2,000, it's nothing. Either one, nothing. Even if it ends up somehow being $2,000, that is a fake win. They want you to go, hooray, even though people are already getting $600 in their accounts as of now. It's nothing. It's pennies. Most people, that's not even rent. Talk about people with families. But, you know, meanwhile, the good news is they're also giving $600 million to fight foreign countries. Because that's what we should care about, right? As always, their wars are more important than you. That's never changed. This is just a very, very, very obvious point in showing you that. Now, on the discussion of them continuing to focus on foreign aggression, you know, their aggression towards foreign entities... there's an interesting thing that just happened. I was almost going to talk about this yesterday, but I wanted to make sure I researched it. But in this moment, I was very, very, the moment I saw this, I knew that this wasn't true. because of a lot of different reasons. Robert and I talked about this. Now, he may be doing a follow-up on this, but it looks like it was so flimsy to begin with that it might not even be worth it. But it, in a general sense, it's important to understand how obviously our government will lie and manipulate just because of what they're trying to achieve. Now, this needs to be, the reason I'm starting with this before we get into the coronavirus topics is to understand this is the same government and the same way that they conduct themselves, how they lie and manipulate and alter what you're seeing so they can drive your perception. That's exactly what we're seeing in every other way with COVID-19. So what we saw here is everybody, and it started with the Washington Times, Iran's Rouhani, the president, issues Trump death threat. Quote, now this is actually ridiculous. The headline, because they actually don't quote this. They put it in quotes, but it's not even actually a quote. The only part of this is that a quote, or rather in a sentence, is in a few days. He says the life of this criminal will end. That's not what he actually said. Now, first, it says, this is, quote, one of the effects, and this is directly what Rouhani said in the translation coming from our government, which, by the way, is very, very wrong. We'll get into that next. He says one of the, but by the way, this is what's humorous to me, that even in their translation with an effort to make it look like he said that, it still doesn't even say that. He says one of the effects of this stupid, disgraceful act, and he's talking about the murder, the unjust and illegal and extrajudicial assassination of Soleimani, who is a head of, you know, leader in Iran who was assassinated on diplomatic mission inside the Baghdad airport, which the U.S. government is occupying that country horribly off the. I mean, that's every single thing about that was so incredibly dishonest and wrong. Everything, every part of it. But it says Mr. Rouhani said this, that the airstrike that killed Soleimani, and he says that Trumpism. Excuse me, I should have read it together. One of the effects of this stupid and disgraceful act was that Trumpism ended. That's what he's saying anyway. And he says, in a few days, the life of this criminal will end and he will go to the dustbin of history. So there, he's not even saying what they're quoting. In a few days, the life of this criminal, you know, so they're manipulating this. Okay, but here's the point. Here's what it actually says. Well, actually, not yet. I wanted to show Newsmax, of course, which pushed it even further. Not surprisingly, because Newsmax is just a more extreme version of Fox News, which is just bipartisan propaganda. Or excuse me, partisan propaganda. Rouhani declares Trump will be dead in a few days. That's actually not what he said, as Iran-U.S. relations keep crumbling. Now, what I find interesting about this one is how ridiculously they try to drive the narrative around even what the claim is. You know, just make sure you know, Iran bad guy, and make sure you know that this, that, you know, it's just driving it in, which is not journalism. That's not how you're supposed to operate as a journalist. You're supposed to report facts and let people think for themselves. Soleimani, the leader of Iran's Quds forces, described by military specialists as an unconventional war and clandestine operations unit, was killed. And that's, I mean, that in and of itself is intentionally insulting understatement of what this person was killed in a targeted drone strike on January 3rd that was approved by Trump. The U.S. Department of Defense, and by the way, it's been admitted by multiple people, including U.S. allies, that he was brought there on a diplomatic mission. So not only did they violate in every other law, they violated something that was, you know, sacred, essentially, right? I mean, maybe lack of a better word, the concept that you're having a diplomatic agreement that you're supposed to, there's trust there, right? Even amongst enemies. But according to, you know, where we are now with our country and our government specifically, they're showing the world that they can't be trusted in any way. The U.S. Department of Defense, it says, blames Soleimani for hundreds of deaths and injuries to Americans. So understand on this part, first of all, this is when they were illegally, and no one denies that it was illegally invading Iraq, based on the illusion that they had WMDs, which we now know was not true. That in and of itself was another manipulation. We know that now. They lied. They knowingly misrepresented the facts to justify what they wanted to do. Does that sound familiar? Should. Then, of course, when Soleimani, who that Iran at that time, allies of Iraq, sharing a very obvious ideological similarity, they stepped in to help and defended the country. There's no, it doesn't matter if you're at different odds. You don't get to call them terrorists, especially when they're doing something which is legally allowed in the rules of war. As I keep pointing out, if another country invaded Florida and the U.S. government shot them away, under their definition right here, that would make them terrorists. But that's stupid. So you don't get to continue to say they kill. Look, and I'm not saying killing anybody is okay in any case. but it's very clear that that's not ultimately the truth. He says he was reportedly killed while in neighboring Iraq while actively developing plans. This is their quote, developing plans to attack American diplomats and service members in Iraq and throughout the region. There's never been a single shred of evidence to back that up. And it also is stupid and doesn't make any sense whatsoever. There's no strategic benefit to that. The only thing they try to sell you on is, well, he's a madman, which is their only thing they can go to because they have no narrative in this regard. All they can do is make up lies about them. And again, guys, this has all been vindicated throughout time. We've seen all the facts come out and lack thereof. It says, besides Trump, Rouhani referred to Secretary of State Mike Pompeo as the main perpetrator. I would agree with that. I can't say I could prove any of that. You know, I don't know whether it was Trump's decision or Mike's decision, but at the end of the day, my gut tells me that Mike Pompeo was one of the foulest, you know, what's the right word for it? Like, I can't even think of a bad enough word. You know, he is the part that is fouling the rest of it. You know, he's the bad apple ruining the bunch, right? But arguably, they're all bad apples. But I think he's a leader in that regard, whether Trump sees it or not. Quote, and this is the full, at least part of it, mistranslated point. One of the effects of this stupid and disgraceful act was that Trumpism ended, and in a few days, the life of this criminal will end, and he will go to the dustbin of history. And we are very happy about this, and we believe that the period after Trump will be a better condition for regional and global stability. Okay, so this went everywhere with nothing to back it up. Every radio station, everywhere, just regurgitated exactly what was stated without any due diligence because our government said that's what he said. That's not what journalists do. A government doesn't say something and you go, oh, government said, I'll report that because government said. Because if government said, well, it has to be true, right? That's literally what you're staring at. You don't just blindly state what they told you to say. That makes you a propagandist. But we know this, right? You see, I'm being facetious in a way because we already know that's the case. We see it every day. But it's not actually true. Iran's president Rouhani accused of threatening Trump with assassination. And I challenge anybody to actually dig into this and find people who can translate what he actually said directly from the actual statement. And it's stupidly obvious that it's not really what he said. It says, it all appears to be based on a mistranslation. Of course, it was an accident, guys. The same accident they do every time. From the Farsi of Rouhani's words while he addressed a cabinet session on Wednesday. In a widely shared article, the Washington Times quoted the Iranian president as saying Trump will be dead, soon be dead. The report claimed this was a clear death threat. Of course they did. Also given Rouhani made a comparison to Saddam Hussein's demise. But Iran's leaders are now, and this is of course politically speaking in regard to Saddam Hussein. Right. This is the idea. It's not about the end of a person's life. He was very clear about the end of the Trumpism. That's what he was talking about. But Iran's leaders are now slamming this as but more anti-Iran bigotry, designed to escalate tensions as a pretext for preemptive military action against Iran. Tehran has called the Washington Times report a deliberate mistranslation based in fake news. It's completely what it is. And whether they knew that or not, or just are blindly doing what the media told them to do, or what the government told them to do, which is what they always do. I have a great clip I'm going to end with today on that same point. But regardless of which way, they ended up selling you misinformation. It says, quote, cowardice in assassinating foreign leaders is a U.S.-Israeli trademark, not Iranian. Foreign leaders, and historically speaking, that's pretty accurate. Iranian foreign minister, they've denied it, was it finished the saying. It says, at the Washington Times, should know better than to publish fake news and spread anti-Iran bigotry, even though it has featured paid content by the outlaw MEK terrorist cult. Think about how crazy that is. MEK is a group that was on the U.S. terrorist watch list until Hillary Clinton removed them from the list. Why? Because they needed them. They didn't change what they were doing. They didn't do anything different. The same reason they're telling, you know, Sudan or anybody else, if you just start working with Israel, we'll take you off the terror list. Did they stop doing what they said was terrorist? Nope, they keep doing it, but they just said, as long as you work with Israel, we don't care. That's called being a hypocrite. The truth is they don't care and they never have. The point is that's a tool used to achieve their goals. So the MEK is a very, very alarming group that you should look into if you haven't heard about them. They're the very definition of the word cult. That's really what they are. They monitor their sexual activity of the people involved. I mean, it's crazy. And the U.S. government are actively working with these people. People like Rudy Giuliani and Elaine Chao, and I'm forgetting some others, are paid speakers for this group. That's crazy. And this Washington Times, of course, is paid content by the MEK. But here's what he says. It says, addressing a cabinet session on Wednesday, this is the real translation, Rouhani said, I said it once and I repeat it. Trump was like Saddam. Saddam imposed 8 years of war against us and he was overthrown. And Trump imposed 3 years of economic war against us and he will be overthrown in the next few weeks. Not just from office, but from political life. One of the effects of the stupid and disgraceful act of assassinating Martyr Soleimani was that Trumpism ended. And in a few days, this murderer's mandate is drawing to an end and he will go down in the dustbin of history. That's quite a bit different, isn't it? Now, one of the points that Robert makes is that Rouhani is a reformist, right? He's on the side that is actively trying to get themselves back in the world economy and so on. So the idea that he would stand up and openly threaten Trump's life is stupid. Doesn't mean it's not possible, but it just doesn't make sense. And then when you find out that the real translation shows you otherwise, just see what this is, guys. Your government, through the media, is trying to manipulate your perception of Iran because they have an agenda to take them out. It's very clear. Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, guys, that's what you're looking at right now. They're allowed to lie to you for national security. That's what they put in the NDAA, and that's what's happening. It's allowed. The Smith-Mundt Act, before they did that, was a law stopping our government, or supposedly stopping them, from using propaganda against American people. They literally changed that. They went in and said, nah, we need to change that for national security. So they said, no, it's legal to do it. They did it before, but now they do it gangbuster styles, nonstop. So the point is, that news story you saw last night, that literally could have been fake news because of national security. That's not a secret. It's not a trick. That is what it says. All they have to do is say, well, if we lie to the American people to convince them Ron bad guy, that's because they're about to attack us and it's national security or whatever they want to say, whether it's true or not. This isn't the first time in a mistranslation of words of Iranian's leadership has led to increased tensions. Of course not. In a 2005 speech, then President Mahmoud, mispronounced his last name, I'm sure, famously declared Iran's goal was to, quote, and we've all heard this, wipe Israel off the map. However, this has since been subject to fierce debate and was largely debunked. He actually said, this is the Mossadegh Project, noted in 2007 that he, quote, never uttered the words map, wipeout, or even Israel. Think about how stupid that is. Rather, he argued the translation should have been that, quote, this regime occupying Jerusalem must vanish from the page of time. Now, he could be lying, but of course, there's translations of actually what he said. And turns out, that's what he actually said. And then you find out that they just pushed the other because they have an agenda. It says the wipe Israel off the map words have been used endlessly by hawks arguing for preemptive action against Iran to prevent their achieving nuclear capacity, as well as what they claim they said, even though they didn't. Now, why would they need to make something like that up? Because it's not really what's happening. Now, I beg of you to realize how important this is in regard to where we currently are with COVID-19. Now, two other points in regard to what's going to happen, in my opinion, the coming false flag, the coming violence that's being planned by Israel and the United States, in my opinion, is that will, and I very strongly believe, will tie in with COVID-19 in some way. That's the whole idea of attacking the infrastructure and the, you know, the idea that white supremacists are working with Al-Qaeda in Iran, which is just really, really stupid. But it turns out that even Iraq and plenty of other people are saying, and the PMU in Iraq are saying, this is completely manipulated. The rocket attacks, guess what? Just like I was saying, are actually false flags. Mere fabrication by Washington, according to Kataib Hezbollah, which is one of the groups they keep saying is an Iran proxy, but they're not. It's very easy to see. Now, yes, these are groups that are ideologically tied. A lot of people in Iraq are ideologically similar to Iran. There's no clear example of them being controlled by Iran. Now, Iran has influence, I would argue, just like the U.S. government has influence in a lot of people around the world. But these are people in Iraq who are fighting for Iraq. And, of course, trying to, you know, fight, not vindicate, but, you know, get to basically take action back against Washington for what they did to the PMU and Iraqi policemen and civilians when they claimed they were fighting Iran. And I showed you that at the time. They murdered civilians, Iraqi policemen, the very people that they claim they're trying to protect, and they just ignored it. Because people that, you know, don't care about human life, don't care about being honest about what they do. Iraq's anti-terror group, Kataib Hezbollah, which is what they are, has called the last week's rocket attack against the U.S. embassy in Baghdad a false flag strike and a plot hatched by Washington. Now, they're trying to pretend like the PMU generally, but specifically Kataib Hezbollah, at least in the beginning, were the ones that were shooting these rockets off. But it's really stupid because they're part of the Iraq military. They get missiles and equipment and munitions from the Iraq government. Do you know where Iraq gets their missiles and munitions? From the U.S. and elsewhere. The point is, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever that these groups would be using Soviet-era Katyusha rockets that don't have any guidance. One, because they know the U.S. is already pretending that means it's Iran, but it doesn't. ISIS has more examples of ISIS using these than anybody else. That's why they don't ever want to talk about it, because I actually think that's what might be happening. But it doesn't make any sense to pretend they would use these and repeatedly use them, even though every time they fall on a field and don't cause any damage. Weirdly, exactly what happens in Gaza in every single time they want to bomb a bunch of places. I think they're using the same narrative. Now, Moi, the spokesman for Kataib Hezbollah, which is part of the country's popular mobilization units, PMU, made the comments in an interview with Al Jazeera, saying Washington is the sole beneficiary of the so-called attack, as it, quote, wants to increase pressure on Iraqi resistance groups, under the guise that they're actually Iran, but they're not. But this is the point. Who else benefits from this? PMU doesn't benefit. Maybe you could say it's retaliation. It's kind of the word I was looking for before. Then that would make sense, but nothing else. There's no benefit to anybody else in doing this. On December 20th, a series of these Katyusha rockets landed near the U.S. embassy and caused no damage or minor damage to buildings, of course, which is always the argument. I wouldn't be surprised if there was no even minor damage. That's just a claim that's being stated. I mean, I don't know why we would believe anything we're being told at this point after they're caught lying about things like Douma or Bolivia or 100 other examples. Moi said the pressure by the U.S. comes as Iraqis are preparing to commemorate the first anniversary of the assassination of Soleimani, which is happening now. And they're doing their usual, and they're saying out there chanting U.S. is the great Satan. And of course, U.S. media is trying to make that out to be, look, they hate you. No, they don't. They're talking about you. They're talking about you, media, and you, government. They're not talking about American people. And they very clearly make that distinction on a regular basis. And I can't even remember the guy's name, but many people have gone to Iran and showed you that they're one of the most friendly countries in regard to American people. They hate the governments of Israel and the governments of the United States. That's what they hate. And they have every good reason to, because they're doing bad things. But it says, and the deputy of the PMU, he said, after the terrorist act, the Iraqi parliament voted overwhelmingly, which remember, in favor of removing all of them from the country. And as much as they scream, we respect your sovereignty, they said, no, we don't care what you say, but we respect your sovereignty. Anti-American sentiments have run even higher in the past few days as Iraqis are outraged by the U.S. president's decision to pardon 4 war criminals. Right, which is just grotesque. The Blackwater contractors, which are mercenaries, had been jailed for killing multiple unarmed Iraqi civilians in Iraq, the country the U.S. government is illegally occupying, and Trump pardoned them. But let's pretend like it's only Iran that's upset in Iraq. Washington claims it fears another attempt against its diplomatic missions and military bases in Iraq as the first anniversary of the martyrdom of the 2 popular anti-terror commanders nears. It says, quote, Washington fears demonstrations near its embassy or any kind of popular activities aimed at exposing the U.S. role in Iraq. And this concern has promoted the American leaders, prompted them to launch these fake strikes against their own embassy. That's the spokesman for PMU or the Kataib Hezbollah group. Pretty interesting, though, wouldn't you say? Seems like exactly what it seems like is happening. On another point, Iran claims Israeli agent provocateurs are plotting attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq. So we have the PMU clearly pointing at what's happening there and suggesting what just happened was a false flag. Iran itself is claiming that Israel is currently creating situations with using agent provocateurs in Iraq. Remember, we already showed you this. We already showed you in the past that that Israel was using fake U.S. passports, which should offend the hell out of you. They're given to them by the U.S. government to get into Iraq and attack from within. This was already shown. There was numerous attacks that have already happened. So there's every reason to believe that this is true. Sunday marks the 1-year anniversary of Soleimani being killed. Iran has over the past days accused both Israel and the U.S. of seeking to provoke a pretext for war And I very clearly think that that is what's happening. On Sunday, Zarif leveled the charge of Iran's enemies seeking to stage provocations in order to give Trump a fake casus belli, basically giving him the justification to do what they want him to do. This time, more specifics were offered, with Zarif claiming Israel is seeking to do this through Israeli agent provocateurs, citing unspecified intelligence, right? So there's no reason you should take him at face value. There's no, just someone saying something is never enough to assume it's happening. I think this is based on other evidence, not just because he says this or in addition, but on top of it, we need to look at history and what's happened before. And I do think this is very, very likely based on the evidence at hand. He says new intelligence from Iraq indicate that Israeli agent provocateurs are plotting attacks against Americans, putting an outgoing Trump in a bind with fake casus belli. So think about how crazy that is. They're saying, just like U.S. Liberty style, that the Israeli government is planning to attack Americans to protect, to give them the justification or maybe trick Trump into doing something before he leaves. That's happened before, right? He says, be careful of a trap. Any fireworks will backfire badly, particularly against your same BFFs. Inside of fighting COVID, instead of fighting COVID in U.S., Donald Trump and cohorts waste billions to fly B-52s and send armadas to our region. And they did, by the way. Intelligence from Iraq indicated a plot to fabricate pretext for war. Iran doesn't seek war, but will openly and directly defend its people. Now, days prior to the U.S. Flew two nuclear-capable B-52s over the Persian Gulf in a what they said was a deterrence to Tehran's leader. A deterrence from what? They're the ones that were attacked. Israel's the one that did it, right? This is the point. We've already talked. And then they go, well, because we did this, now we're worried they're going to strike back. So now we have to fight again. How does anybody think that makes sense? There's no logic there. So now you have to fight first again because you attack them. Now you have to attack again because they're going to respond. I mean, this is, what are we in kindergarten? Like, how do we not see how obviously this is being pushed forward? It appears Iran thinks this will take the form of more attacks on the U.S. embassy in Baghdad, or perhaps against bases with a strong American presence in other parts. Both sides are poised with fingers on the trigger in anticipation of a provocation by the other side in an intensifying standoff, which could very easily escalate into the very conflict both hope to avoid. Now, in the days coming, I really believe that we're going to see something happen, whether Trump gets pulled in or not. Ultimately, it's hard to say. I would guess that Trump is probably along with this, to be completely honest. But at the end of the day, I do believe that we're going to see some kind of provocation. And I do believe that's going to be stemming from Israel on the ground. Let me finish this real quick. Now, moving forward, Rachel Blevins points out, not only will Biden not decrease defense spending, he's calling for more money to be spent, quote, modernizing our defense priorities to better deter aggression from Iran and China, citing a reported cyber attack from alleged Russian hackers without evidence. Of course, Russiagate continuing. Classic. More money going out, more spending, which will be the point. It will continue no matter what. Same concept I keep telling you guys. Meet the new boss, same as the old boss. Now, jumping forward, this is what we're getting into for the next year, right? Realize that 2020 is really no different than 2021, except for something that's being added on. This idea that we're suddenly in some new, you know, changing world because 2021 is just really stupid. All the evidence is in front of you. U.S. confirms first case of the new COVID strain discovered in the U.K. And as I said on my blocked Twitter account, it begins again. And remember that there's no evidence at all to suggest. Actually, I had that up down here, I believe, at a later point, but we'll come back to it. Another flawed data model from Imperial College to blame for latest U.K. lockdowns. The group decided there was not enough evidence, but because of one person, Neil Ferguson, they decided to lock down again. That's not how this works. It shows you that there's clearly political motivations. U.S. confirms first case of new COVID strain, and all of a sudden, everything starts kicking back into gear in the same way it was before. This is from The Guardian, as I showed in a previous stream. It doesn't change. every year, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, all the way to 2019. Hospitals full to bursting, bed shortages hit dangerous levels, hospitals scramble to prevent crisis, more patients overstretched, and yet every single year. So is it different now? Or has it always been that way? Have they always hyped this concept? And was it always actually happening? Or was it always hyped for very political reasons? I don't know the answers to those questions, but I find it very telling that it happens every single time. Every single year, the same concept, over and over and over. Now, I see something very alarming happening with this vaccine, to start off with the vaccine topic. Something very alarming that's happening here, which I feel is an experiment. I feel that it is being obviously, I feel we are being, not just the vaccine itself, but how it's being given. I'm beginning to think that there's more happening than we see. Vaccine overdose. Israeli pharmacist hospitalized after accidentally receiving 4 doses. How exactly do you accidentally give 4 times the amount? Was this the very first one he'd ever given in his life? Right? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Now it says, an Israeli pharmacist who was mistakenly injected with 4 doses was taken to the hospital so he could be monitored. But apparently they're claiming there's no serious side effects. But it says that he told Israeli media he was feeling fine hours after being administered the vaccine, which is supposed to be given in 2 doses several weeks apart. Right? So there's no way you could accidentally do that, in my opinion. The healthcare worker responsible for the unfortunate mishap was reportedly unaware that each vial of the drug typically contains at least 5 doses. Interesting. Now, it seems like it could have just been a little mishap, a little quirky mistake, right? Oh, of course, now it's going to freeze on me. But I believe there's more happening here. Let me see if I've got a clip I can play while that's going. Let us see here. Here's a good one.
What we're going to have to figure out, and I think what we're all going to have to figure out together, is what our new normal looks like. Our new normal includes physical distancing from others. Our new normal includes wearing masks where appropriate. Our new normal includes us knowing where this virus is each and every day, where we live, where we work, where we want to travel.
The plan is to rush a new generation of experimental vaccines to market and deliver them at warp speed before any long-term testing has even been attempted. What many do not yet understand, however, is that the vaccines that are being developed for SARS-CoV-2 are unlike any vaccines that have ever been used on the human population before. And, as radically different as these vaccines appear, they represent only the very beginning of a complete transformation of vaccine technology that is currently taking place in research labs across the planet. The success of these vaccines is not being measured by their ability to prevent infection with SARS-CoV-2, as many in the general public believe, but merely to lessen the severity of the symptoms associated with COVID-19, like coughs and headaches.
Do you anticipate that the first sets of vaccines out the door will be more of a less effective blocker of the virus?
Well, that's a great question, and that's the primary endpoint of most of the virus, is to prevent clinical disease, to prevent symptomatic disease, not necessarily to prevent infection.
The studies are touted as involving tens of thousands of people, but in Pfizer's trial, only 170 of them were reported as being diagnosed with COVID-19 during the trial. Of those, 162 were in the placebo group and 8 were in the vaccine group. From this, it is inferred that the vaccine prevented 154 of 162 people from developing the disease, or 95%. But as even the British Medical Journal points out, a relative risk reduction is being reported, not absolute risk reduction, which appears to be less than 1%. As even the UK's own Information for UK Healthcare Professionals pamphlet regarding Pfizer's vaccine points out, animal reproductive toxicity studies have not been completed, meaning that it is unknown whether the vaccine has an impact on fertility. Even more children.
Okay, coming back, I apologize about that. But so we have, moving forward, more examples of this weird, I don't even know what you would call this. this over people getting too much of what they should be given. Remember, the idea is these vaccines are supposed to hold five doses. The vial, excuse me. Nursing home workers accidentally injected with five COVID-19 vaccine doses. Eight workers at a German nursing home were accidentally injected with five doses each of the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine, according to reports. But as they were being inoculated Sunday, they each received five doses at once. Five doses at once. I mean, I don't even, again, think about how obviously that would not make sense in regard to other examples. Four were admitted to a hospital for observation after developing mild flu-like symptoms while the others were sent home. Now, again, it's not, I mean, are COVID symptoms, are they not flu symptoms? Right? So when we're talking about the idea of the Israeli point we're going to get to, of all these people getting COVID, it's interesting just to see the symptoms in the same way and align that with a PCR test and boom, what do you know? But it says, I deeply regret this incident. Kirth, who blamed the incident on human error. I hope all those affected suffer no serious side effects. Interesting. Same thing, and there's another point they added here. It's just the same topic of the same eight different German care employees all got five times. I just don't see how that can possibly happen. All in this, it says eight employees received five times the 30 microgram dose of the jab, which was recently christened Comirnaty, the name of the vaccine. Four of those were hospitalized as a precautionary measure after experiencing flu-like symptoms. Now it says here, which is important, while the prescribed dose for Comirnaty is just 30 mcg. A spokesman for the BioNTech insisted researchers had experimented with increased dosages. So now they're trying to say, well, it's okay though, because we experimented with increased dosages during clinical trials and found doses of as much as 100 were tolerated without serious consequences, tolerated. However, five times the normal dose would be 150. Half again as much as 100 overdose. And it's not clear if any of the clinical trials have been tested in such high doses. Maybe that's what's happening now, right? I mean, the possibility that that is what's happening is hard to ignore. Here's another one. West Virginia health officials mistakenly give 42 people Regeneron instead of a vaccine shot, which is supposedly the one that Trump got. But this is what's going to blow your mind here, is that this is not even administered in the same way. Dozens of people in West Virginia were mistakenly given Regeneron's COVID-19 antibody treatment instead of the Moderna vaccine. So this either means that they were injecting this with a syringe and not realizing that was wrong, or these are the dumbest healthcare workers in the history of, you'll see what I mean. Everyone who received the antibody treatment instead of the vaccine, which is given via a shot in the arm, have been contacted. Julie Miller, an administrator for the Boone County Health Department, told CNBC by email. She added that we do not believe there's any risk of harm. First of all, the point that this can even happen, just that they're just swapping out things, I mean, that could have been lethal, depending on what they accidentally gave them. This, by the way, guys, is why medical treatment is either second or third cause of death in this country. Heart disease, number one, well before COVID came around. Last time I checked, I believe it was third, but I find that hard. I mean, think about with under COVID, it's probably number one now. But it was, previous to this, about number three. Regeneron's monoclonal antibody treatment, which needs to be administered through an IV drip. Okay, so if Regeneron needs to be delivered by an IV drip, and yet they were injecting people in the arm with it, that means they didn't know that there was Regeneron they were putting in the syringe? I mean, we don't know, because they don't tell you how this all happened. But it's seen as a promising treatment, they say, especially when administered early on in the course of infection. But the mix-up in West Virginia is just one example of confusion in the rush to distribute the vaccine to tens of millions of people. The rollout has been slower than expected and marked by logistical challenges. Quote, all of the affected individuals will be offered the COVID-19 vaccine today. Cool. Have we tested to see if there's any conflicts between Regeneron and COVID-19 vaccines being given at the same time? No. So, but who cares though, right? Because we know no matter what, the vaccine's safe no matter what. If you think otherwise, you're anti-science, anti-vax conspiracy theory. You know, it's stupid. I would go ahead and assume there's probably not. because of its the way that these affect your body. But the point is that there is no evidence of whether, as far as I can find, maybe there is and I haven't seen it, of these things being tested alongside each other. I'm going to assume no, because this is so new. And by the way, because I did try to find it and I didn't see any evidence of it. But the point is that they don't know, but yet they're going to go ahead and give them the vaccine anyway, because their mandate is to make sure the vaccine is not seen as dangerous no matter what, even if it's actually seen as dangerous or shown to be dangerous. Miller did not provide any details on what causes the mixed up. Of course not, because we don't need to know why they obviously, I mean, that should be a huge deal. These people should lose their jobs. There's no way that can just happen. Unless you're bad at your job, or you're not doing your due diligence, or something, or whether you made, if you made a mistake, only way that can happen. Major General James Hoyer, quote, "We immediately reviewed and strengthened our protocols to enhance our distribution process to prevent this from happening again." Nonsense. A typical nonsense response, right? So you are saying that you didn't have very strong protocols before this, or your distribution process would not really thoroughly look through, right? So why didn't you do this before? Just by saying you're going to look at it again, it means this can happen again, because it was already happening before. He added that the state will continue to ramp up distribution of the vaccines to save more lives every single day. Of course, just jam in the talking points. Don't worry about this obvious mistake, but we're going to just ramp up vaccines even as we're continually making mistakes all over the place. Because that makes sense. Again, we're going to do what's not safe for your safety. Perfectly makes sense. As I said, guys, we're being experimented on. I just don't see any other example here. Or that's my opinion. But there's so many examples of this weirdly happening. And this next part, I think, explains it to some degree, or at least gives a logical possibility of why this might be happening if it is indeed an accident, which I'm on the fence on that, to be honest. Politico, FDA says Pfizer vaccine vials hold extra doses. Doesn't that seem a little bit like, so if these people did give them extra because of that, it wouldn't end up to being five times more. So that's why I immediately think that's really crazy and not accurate. But this doesn't seem very scientific to me, very safe. And it's exactly what's ultimately happening, because there was a lot of confusion, and you're not going to believe the next part, but we'll get to it next. Pharmacists have found a way to squeeze extra doses. This is actually their PR. Like, this first sentence is how they're trying to sell you on why this is not alarming. But it totally is. This overfilling of something that's supposed to be this is medication. That's like them saying, oh, you know, we gave you medications, but there might be a little bit extra on top of those pills, but you know, whatever. Pharmacists have found a way, and that's technically not a great analogy, but you get the point. Pharmacists have found a way to squeeze extra doses out of vials of Pfizer's vaccine, potentially expanding the nation's scarce supply by up to 40%. But how is it expanding the supply if it's there? They didn't do anything. All that happened was Pfizer put arguably too much, or accidentally did it. They argue they did it on purpose. More than was supposed to be in these vials. So they didn't just like work up some math problem to figure out getting more. They just were given more. And the argument is they didn't know what to do with it, and now they're finding a thing to do with it. So the way they frame that just seems really dishonest. But it says the Food and Drug Administration said late Wednesday that those extra doses could be used, clearing up confusion that had caused some pharmacists to throw away leftover vaccine for fear of violating the rules the agency set last week. Right. There's an obvious inconsistency here that should be alarming, that no one's really giving much talk, you know, giving much attention to. Given the public health emergency, FDA is advising that it is acceptable to use every full dose obtainable, which doesn't seem like that would, why is that something you need to say? Right? I mean, imagine you're getting something in a vial and you're pulling some out of it to, you know, filling the syringe the right amount, and there's some left in the vial. I don't understand why it's so unrealistic to take some out of that vial and then take some out of the next one. It's all the same product, yeah? So something about this doesn't make sense to me, but you guys tell me what you think. The federal government has not publicly announced the guidance. Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech learned of the change this afternoon. Find it interesting that they just talked about a German discussion from the laws in Germany that are influencing our censorship on Twitter. And of course, Pfizer is its German partner BioNTech. That's not an accident or a coincidence. The Pfizer vials are supposed to hold five doses, but pharmacists have found they have enough for a sixth or even a seventh dose. So you're telling me potentially a third again, give or take, on top, two more doses in one with five. I don't understand why that wouldn't be an acknowledged thing if it wasn't an accident. to just throw in their lap and have them. And on top of that, doesn't that then put at risk the amount you're giving? If you have another two doses on top of the five in every vial, why don't hold them back and make more vials? As they're screaming about how we don't might not have enough, it's almost like they're trying to create a scarcity that's not there. Makes a lot of sense, of course, especially when they want to make it seem like us not doing this is why it's failing, instead of them making sure they don't reach it so they can then create a societal pressure that drives us into conformity and drives us into social credit and all the things we see coming. It says, putting those into use, the extra doses, could significantly increase the United States scarcity. Right. So why not just not put them in those? This was an accident. This was a mistake that's being framed as some kind of a, you know, pharmacist saving the day. Something very off and malfeasance, in my opinion. But it could significantly increase the early scarce supply, which doesn't seem to be scarce if it's right in front of you, reducing the likelihood of a vaccine cliff, which is what they're selling us on right now, that this is going to happen. Which I'll get to in a point in a minute about why Fauci's now saying how we mean now we need to redistribute the second doses to new people because this might happen. None of this makes sense. Pharmacists nationwide swiftly noticed the extra supply, prompting outreach to Pfizer itself. Now, of course, they end, or at least in the middle, I guess, yes, the end, with what should have been stated first so you understand the flow of information. So before they allowed this, basically pharmacists noticed this issue and prompted reaching out to Pfizer. Now it says, quote, the amount of vaccine remaining in the multi-dose vial after the removal of the five doses can vary, depending on the type of needles and syringes used. Already, that sounds so incredibly inconsistent and not scientific or medically accurate. That's according to Pfizer's spokesperson, right? Why aren't we taking medical advice? Why are we taking advice on how these should be administered by a corporation? Because they're the ones running the show. At this time, we cannot, they say, provide a recommendation on the use of the remaining amount of vaccine from each vial. Vaccinators need to consult their institution's policies for the use of multi-dose vaccines. This is very strange. Both Pfizer and the FDA had said that the leftover vaccine from multiple vials should not be mixed because of the contamination risk. Okay, so now they're saying, yeah, go ahead and use if you can get an extra dose out of that vial. But if there's half a dose left, you can't use it. But now it's going to be our fault that they have vaccine shortages. Right? On top of that, we know that's going to happen. People will mix them, and that will create a new problem. And that's going to be another way for them to say, look at all these problems that are happening because of the vaccine. Oh, it turns out it was a contamination risk because those pharmacists didn't listen to us. When in reality, it's most likely, in my opinion, coming from the side effects of the vaccine. Former Obama administration acting CMS chief Andy Slavitt tweeted about the potential vaccine wastage on Tuesday and insisted that Pfizer is now submitting paperwork to let pharmacists use the extra doses if they're available. I was kind of floored seeing all of these other examples of overdose situations and we're pretending like those aren't related. Something strange is going on. Now, on top of all of it, this one, I don't understand how this can actually happen. I feel like I was looking for some kind of Onion post or the Babylon Bee. I was like, there's no way this can be happening. But sure enough, this is happening. January 1st, the United Kingdom allows mixing of COVID-19 vaccines, not ones we just talked about, not the leftover doses, but literally talking about saying, okay, I got my first shot from Moderna, but now because we gave that second shot to somebody else, it's okay if I get the Pfizer one. This is actually what they're saying. And that's in contrast to what their own medical experts are saying. So again, when we look back to things like Neil Ferguson and the shutdown, based on nothing that's really showing any evidence of transmission or increased, you know, that's what NervTag came to the conclusion of. There was not enough evidence that the new strain was actually more dangerous. That's exactly what the WHO said as well. But because Neil Ferguson said so, they put everyone on lockdown and ruined Christmas, right? This is what this comes down to. Now it says British health officials will now allow people to mix COVID-19 vaccines as the pandemic rages on, which again, that's the narrative, but experts warn it could be risky. That's a dramatic understatement, right? Their experts are saying this shouldn't happen. They're doing it anyway. It shows you that they don't really care. Like, you can't challenge the WHO unless we don't like it and then we'll ignore it. It says the tweak in vaccine advice, which comes as the country grapples with a new, of course, again, this is what they're selling you on, the new highly contagious mutation of the virus. The evidence shows that's not, at the very least, there's no evidence that it is actually more transmissible or more dangerous. That's what the WHO said, everybody else. But of course, they're already pushing that as the justification for why they're doing another unsafe and untested, unregulated cons of action. So they're pushing unsafe things for your safety. It says it marks a surprising departure from previous guidance and a starkly different approach to the vaccine rollout in the U.S., the New York Times reported. The U.K. protocol now states that a person can receive their follow-up COVID-19 jab with a different vaccine candidate to their first dose, if necessary. Britain has approved two vaccines for the deadly bug developed by AstraZeneca and Pfizer. Quote, for individuals who started the schedule and who attended the for vaccination at a site where the same vaccine is not available, or if the first product received is unknown, which I don't even understand what that means, how would they not know? Aren't they supposed to be like meticulously documenting this so they can track us everywhere and tell us? I mean, that doesn't even make sense. It says it is reasonable to offer, reasonable, according to whom? Reasonable to offer one dose of the locally available product to complete the schedule. Because completing the schedule is all that matters. Not whether they've been tested together, not whether that could be potentially lethal, not, I mean, any number of things, because we just don't know. They are different products made by different companies, and we do not know how they'll react together. Just because they're aiming for the same thing does not make them the same thing. It says, however, the protocol does reiterate that receiving a second dose of the same vaccine is preferable, noting that a different inoculation should only be used if the patient is at immediate high risk or considering unlikely to attend again. Do you realize what that says? So if they believe that you are unlikely to come back, they'll just go ahead and give you. So it's more important to them to risk your life with an untested combination than to allow you to leave without getting a second vaccination of a wildly rushed experimental injection. It's just unbelievable. And of course, if you're at immediate high risk is an objective, you know, that could be decided by anybody there. And understand that they think that if you have COVID in general, you're at an immediately high risk, especially if you're at a certain age with comorbidities. So the end of the day, they'll give you this second vaccine. Then we're going to find countless examples, especially when we start to have the false scarcity of the vaccine distribution. Then they're going to start giving other vaccines. And guess what? Then all the side effects will be because of bad decision made by them, not because of the vaccine. On and on and on. They'll have all these little sidestep caveats where they can say, no, it wasn't the vaccine that did this. It's this bad action or this mistake or this overfilling or on and on and on. It says, in these circumstances, as both the vaccines are based on the spike protein, it is likely the second dose will help to boost the response to the first dose. Just simply, I don't even think the person who wrote this knows what they're talking about. Because they're both based on the spike protein? That's not even how you would describe that. We've gone over this on the show multiple times on the way that this is supposed to, this is supposed to trigger a response into so that it creates the spike protein that the virus can then recognize and ultimately, I think I'm describing it incorrectly. If I remember correctly, the point is that it's about not creating antibodies to be able to fight to resist the virus, but instead create your body's own way of fighting the virus itself. But just saying based on the same spike protein is incorrect. Now understand what I was saying there is accurate, but I want to be very specific on how I'm describing this for you. And I have previous shows where we've gone over it. And again, I'm not a scientist. It's important for you to understand this stuff for yourself, to research it for yourself, to look it up for yourself, to ask questions, to question everything, as always. Anybody telling you that this is the facts and everybody else is wrong is probably someone you shouldn't listen to. You should look at what they have to say, as always, because you should look at every possible opinion. But the people out there that are screaming that they're right above and beyond anybody else, and there's nothing else you should look at, all you should do is listen to them. We know what that is. We've all seen it. It's everywhere. Those are the kind of people that get mad that we're willing to consider other people's opinions. That's not honest. That's not what scientists do. That's not what doctors do. Real doctors, real scientists. But it says, but the new advice has still raised eyebrows in the scientific community. I couldn't believe this. That even they're reporting that. I mean, it's the New York Post. I argue that, you know, political sides and all, I argue that if this was on maybe like the Washington Post, they probably wouldn't say that. But it's really incredible to realize that even their community, right? Well, of course, the scientific community to them are only people that agree with their narrative. But now even they are saying, well, that doesn't really seem like it makes sense. Here's a direct quote from Cornell University vaccine expert. There are no data on this whatsoever. John Moore, speaking with the Times, Cornell University vaccine expert, adding that the UK officials seem to have abandoned science completely and are just trying to guess their way out of a mess. I can't believe we're at a point where this is what's actually being stated. That their officials are saying that they're just abandoned science and that they're guessing with something that's experimental and dangerous and never been done before. And we're just letting it happen. Crazy. The update also stands in contrast, guess what, to the guidelines established by the CDC, which explicitly states that vaccines are not interchangeable. But here's, again, the point that I always try to go back to is remember the discussion of the vaccines in regard to how many they give children and how they don't test those with each other. But now the point applies. So doesn't this seem to call into question every single child that's ever gotten multiple vaccines that weren't tested together? Yes, it does. But they don't care because it's only about selling the narrative now. When the time, when the new child comes around, they'll still push those into them and argue that you're crazy for saying anything else. But when it comes to this, no, you can't mix them because they weren't tested with each other. Just crazy. It says these mRNA COVID-19 vaccines are not interchangeable with each other or with other COVID-19 vaccine products. The safety and efficacy of a mixed product series has not been evaluated. Right? Again, see, but that counts now, but not with other vaccines. So don't think about this later. The CDC does go on to say that if doses of different vaccines are inadvertently given, then no additional doses of either vaccine should be administered. So not only are they saying you shouldn't mix them, they're saying if you accidentally get a different vaccine, then you should be done. No more vaccines are given. Right? And by the way, they're also talking about, as they say right here, doses of either vaccine, where was it? Interchangeable and COVID-19 products, such as Regeneron, right? So Regeneron's given to all these people, and then they go, don't worry, we're going to give the vaccine tomorrow, though, which is a direct contrast to what the CDC is telling them to do. No additional vaccines, but who cares, right? Because all they can do is scream about how the vaccine's safe no matter what. And here's the point that I was saying about before. Fauci is now saying that they're going to spread out the first doses of COVID-19. Why? To get it to more people, or rather it's under consideration. How does that make any sense? What they're saying is, okay, so that, by the way, I find it very almost alarming that this says 28 days later. Hopefully you guys get the point. But it says Pfizer shot requires a second dose 21 days later, and the Moderna shot requires a second dose 28 days later. Now, if they're going to take, and the point is they're supposed to have these doses set away, right? So they give somebody the vaccine. Now they've got those for them for their second dose ready and set away. And they've got contact with people and they're going to tell them to come back and so on, right? So surveillance and all that, but who cares, right? According to them. But he's saying we're going to take those extra ones and start giving those to people now. And then they actually warn that that might end up being where there's a shortage. So are they intending, like, why would they intentionally do this to set it up to where the person doesn't get their second shot? I'm not, by the way, I'm in no way arguing that we should want these, take them, or anything. Hopefully that's wildly clear. But within their narrative, this doesn't seem to make sense. It's almost as if they want to create a situation where people only get one and then can't get another one. So then next time it comes around, they got to go, okay, we got to do it all again and give you two in a row because we didn't get them in the, blah, 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 blah. Interesting. I'm beginning to see in every way, it's almost as if they're trying to create the scenario where it doesn't amount to what they want it to, and they plan on blaming us. So they can create situations like mandatory vaccines, like Fauci already said, was not off the table, or societal and financial exclusion, which are already happening. In any case, I'm alarmed about this whole situation. And now we see AstraZeneca saying, guess what? It's 100% effective, and everybody should laugh, because that's dumb. No scientist, doctor, or mathematician will ever tell you that anything is 100%, because that just doesn't make sense. What about the people that there's some, like, even if it is 100% in a general sense, there are people that it won't work for. That doesn't mean it won't be 100%. And also, it's against severe COVID-19, not transmission, which is how people are already misrepresenting what this is saying. None of these set out, none of them, in their early materials, as I said when this first started, months ago, none of them set out with the intention to actually even find out if it stopped transmission. But they're selling you on it 100%, no matter what. Now, things are not 100%. That is not how this works. But they want to sell you on that because there's much more happening here. But for their 100% effective, 240, I believe, Israelis from that 100% effective vaccine were infected with COVID after receiving the vaccine. Or excuse me, this is a Pfizer vaccine. Same point, regardless. Pfizer says 95%. Amid frenzied inoculation campaign. Now, this is really weird because this is what their argument is not that this caused it, but rather that they caught it, all of them, right afterward. Which, you know, I'll let you think for what you want about this. Now, if here's the important part. If what we know about these vaccines is correct, which is a huge if, as it should be, I would argue that it does not seem possible that you could catch this in the way that it seems they're saying after the fact. But remember, there's something we've talked about, pathogenic priming, right? Which is a topic we've talked about in regard to people taking the vaccine. And this has happened before, specifically with mRNA vaccines, specifically in regard to coronaviruses. These are attempts they've made in the past. MERS, SARS, they've tried this before and repeatedly failed. And weirdly, they all simultaneously succeeded right now, together. Just must be coincidence, right? But the point is they've done this before, they tried it, and they hurt people. And the pathogenic priming is the idea that you get the vaccine, it shows a really strong antibody response, or in this case, the protein. And ultimately what happens is you go out into the wild and get in contact with the wild virus, and it's exponentially worse. RFK Jr.'s talked about this. We've already shown, I believe James Lyon Wheeler's talked about this. A lot of people have pointed this out. So that does seem to suggest to me that this can cause more severe, that you could catch it and be more severe. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's causing that you caught it. Like that the vaccine actually gave it to you, but you could catch it and get it, it would be much, much worse. So it's kind of splitting hairs, to be completely honest. But it says, in a world where the rollout of COVID vaccines has been far slower than the so-called experts predicted, which is bizarre considering the plunge in public faith in the COVID scientist sector, rightly so. There's a lot of people masquerading as smart scientists out there, you know, PhDs and whatnot, that really don't know what the hell they're talking about. Sector amid the surge in horror stories involving adverse side effects from both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, to which the mainstream media has finally caught on as detailed in as COVID-19 vaccines come online. Fewer Americans want to take them, right? I wonder why. The same mainstream media has been fawning over those countries which have steamrolled through popular skepticism, otherwise stated as not caring what their people say, and opposition, and with authoritarian ruthlessness to unleash widespread vaccination campaigns, praising them as models nations that everyone should follow, countries like Israel. New York Times rushed to congratulate Israel, explaining how Israel became a world leader in vaccinating against COVID-19. No one wants to talk about how they came out and said they had a vaccine like months into this. Remember that? No one talked about that. It got really quickly put away, and then we didn't talk about it again until now. Seems to suggest something there. It says, in short, Israel, great and shining example of how to force millions to get injected with some mRNA. But it says, which would be fantastic if only it wasn't for the ideologically mandated and rushed conclusion, which is laughable at best and potentially lethal at worst, because just as Israel has been scrambling to get everyone vaccinated with substances whose side effects are still very much unknown, the Times of Israel reported that over 200 Israeli citizens have been diagnosed with the disease days after getting the vaccine. The number of those who got COVID-19 despite being vaccinated was at around 240 people. According to the official explanation provided by the Israeli media, while the Pfizer biotech vaccine doesn't contain the coronavirus and can't inject the recipient, time is needed for the genetic code in the drug to train the immune system to recognize and attack the disease. 240 is rarely found with COVID after vaccination. Now, the idea is that they're claiming that, of course, and which does make sense, that this takes time to have effects. But what this seems to suggest to me, one, very clearly, is that it does not stop transmission. And by the way, whether or not we're staring at this, we already know that because they didn't even try, which is the whole point. But it seems to suggest something a little bit more, that all of them instant, like days after this, all get it. It doesn't, I mean, that is a higher prevalence within the study group or the vaccination group that they gave it to than in general population. It doesn't seem to make much sense. And if it happened days after, could it have been that this was a pathogenic priming we were just talking about? Certainly could be. But at the end of the day, realize that this is not a secret. The WHO has warned it does not have evidence that any of these COVID vaccines prevent people from passing a virus on to other people. And they require the same precautions. So whether or not you get the vaccine, the jab, the experimental injection, you still have to quarantine. You still have to wear masks, or argue that they tell you you still have to. I don't think you should at all. I think there's a lot more happening here. But as I said again, of course, that I have to show you a tweet, an email of it, because the account's no longer there. You would have known this since the start of the vaccine safety trials, in quotes, had you been watching the daily wrap-up. This was stated in the trial literature. They never even set out to stop transmission, despite mainstream media willfully letting you think otherwise. Now, by the way, on a side note, for everybody watching right now, the hashtag the daily wrap-up is still being used, whether by me or people posting it. If you're on Twitter or elsewhere, that is where you want to look at, because it will be posted every day before we go live with the hashtag. So there's one place you could look. I'm sure Twitter will continue to censor it and elsewhere. The real point is you should go to our website. Follow, subscribe to the website, subscribe to the podcast, and there'll always be ways you can keep up on the show. But the hashtag is still being used. So whether or not this account is on Twitter, you know, and the 40,000 people that were following it, because, you know, clearly they don't care about you, the hashtag will continue to be used. So continue to look for it. Now, here's another example of a Mexican doctor. This is January 2nd, yesterday, admitted in the ICU. So it's critical after receiving a Pfizer vaccine. Why isn't the media reporting this? Well, because they don't want you knowing that there's bad things happening, because they're not there to inform you. As the vaccination drive to end the pandemic slowly heats up, another health worker has suffered a serious allergic reaction after getting the Pfizer, Inc. and BioNTech coronavirus vaccine. More allergic reactions. A 32-year-old female doctor in Mexico was hospitalized after receiving the vaccine, admitted to the intensive care unit, after she experienced seizures, difficulty breathing, and a skin rash. The initial diagnosis is encephalitis is the shorter term. It basically inflammation of the brain. It's an inflammation of the brain and spinal cord. That's the extra part. It's an encephalomyelitis, maybe. But encephalitis itself is just the inflammation of the brain. So that this is a very serious side effect. Now, they're saying that this guy had a history of allergic reactions, and so that's why it happened, but that's not a good enough excuse. I already showed you that an alarming amount of people in this country have a history of allergic reactions. But just because you have a history of allergic reactions doesn't mean that having swelling in your brain and spinal cord are normal after something like this. And it's happening all over the place. And on top of that, I don't know why we would believe that he has a history of allergic reactions. It's certainly possible, but they are doing everything they can to cover up the dangers so you don't get afraid, because they're trying to stop vaccine hesitancy. They've already said this. In event 201 and otherwise, they openly state in the exercise that literally came into exact real-world scenarios that they would censor even real stuff if it attacked, you know, undermined their agenda. This is stated. So I don't know why we'd believe any of it. But in any case, that is alarming, and it's happening everywhere. French infectious disease expert, shocked by the number of adverse reactions, right? So as all the media talking heads out there go, no, this is totally normal. This is about the normal amount of side effects. They don't know what the hell they're talking about. They're being told what to say because they're a bunch of, you know, blow-dried, whatever you want to call them, you know, just fake people. Here's an actual expert who's saying he's alarmed by how many of these things he's seeing. But the media doesn't care about that, because they're not here to inform you. And as I pointed out in my last show with Derek on The Blaze, as well as Reuters, Dr. Mark Peters, director of the FDA's Center for Biologics Evaluation and Research, said at a press conference that experts were not sure what caused the allergic reactions, but identified polyethylene glycol as the potential culprit. But they're not sure, though. We're confused. By the way, the ingredient is in both Pfizer and Moderna's vaccine. Also stated right here on Reuters, five people, now more than five now, by the way, quite a bit more, had allergic reactions after the Pfizer shot. This was from December 18th. But same thing, saying that this is could be the culprit. Could be. An alarming number of U.S. health officials are refusing to take this. I wonder why that would be. Well, here's why. Because they're probably well aware that even according to Wikipedia, PEG, polyethylene glycol, is considered biologically inert by the FDA. However, a growing body of evidence shows the existence of detectable levels of anti-PEG antibodies in approximately 72% of the population, never treated with the pegylated drugs based on plasma samples. Due to its ubiquity in a multitude of products and the large percentage of the population with antibodies to PEG, hypersensitive reactions to PEG are an increasing concern. But the FDA is baffled. We don't know what's going on, is stated right on Wikipedia that's been there for a very long time. Allergy to PEG is usually discovered after a person has been diagnosed with an allergy to an increasing number of seemingly unrelated products, including foods like processed foods, cosmetics and drugs, and other substances that contain PEG were manufactured with it. So it's like an industrial disease. Great. The point here is that I would argue there's some people know what's going on. You can't pretend this is a bunch of fringe conspiracy weirdos when the majority of the very people, the heroes that you're telling us are heroes, who are suddenly no longer heroes because they don't do what they're told, are saying, no, we don't want this dangerous thing. But they're not sure, right? We don't know what it is. Everybody, including Dr. Lyons Wheeler and those people, have been told, they've been telling you this is what's going to happen. But they're baffled. But the reason, you know, as they're all saying, no, we don't want this, they're just trying to normalize it, trying to casually make this seem like it's okay. As I just showed you the other day, unbelievably so, the Wall Street Journal, they're saying, oh, you know, these, because basically 72%, that's actually interesting. Correlation. Not that it means anything necessarily. Excuse me, got the hiccups. But that 72% of people have a potential for, you know, severe, basically that your body could then start attacking these and essentially start attacking your own body because of what it's doing to your body. Like, that's an alarming reality that it could start a severe allergic reaction. Essentially, your body attacking itself. And then we also have exactly the same percentage of nurses and people in the nursing industry refusing to take this vaccine. Maybe it's because they know. That's that's very obvious to me. And it says one Georgia company is now offering staffers who take the shot a free Waffle House breakfast. Really? I mean, that's just so stupid. And as I pointed out, we know you're starving. And we just gave you basically nothing, so $600. So here's a junk food breakfast. Only one per starving family. As long as you take our intentionally rushed experimental injection that even our own medical personnel are refusing. That's what they think of you. But on top of that, this one's even more ridiculous. The Herald. Anyone who gets vaccinated at a BrewDog bar will receive a special commemorative beer. Oh, and you can name it. How cool. I mean, it's just so crazy. They think we are that stupid. We'll just give them a beer and they'll get it. Let's all speed out and get our wildly rushed experimental genetically altering injection at the bar. Sounds totally legit. I can't stop hiccuping now. You even get a commemorative beer. They're not trying to normalize this dangerous thing at all. It's just very weird. It's very weird. Like, the way it's so obviously deceptive and manipulative at the core. And on top of that, let me be clear, Biden says, the Biden-Harris administration will spare no effort to make sure people are getting vaccinated, which could be taken as a threat or a promise or, you know, however you want to look at it. But I kind of see it as not just COVID-19, but flu vaccinations and other kinds as well. And Fauci is telling you right now that everything will be on the table. Could be, will be. Meaning mandatory vaccines. Give me 1 second here so I can try to drink something and make this go away. Let me play one of these other clips for you again. I'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, this is actually very, very relevant to what I was just saying in regard to pathogenic priming. This is a good clip, actually.
What we're going to have to figure out, and I think what we're all going to have to figure out together is...
Forgot to pull off that other link. 1 second. Here we go. This is actually a really great clip. I can play both of them for you.
Government's been trying for almost 30 years to develop a coronavirus vaccine, and it's been unsuccessful. And beginning in 2002, there were three outbreaks of coronavirus, we call them SARS, at that point in MERS. The first SARS was a natural illness, jumped from a bat to human beings. The second two were lab-created that escaped and infected human beings. And so the governments of China and a consortium of Western governments all got together and put millions and millions of dollars into an effort to develop a coronavirus vaccine. And between 2002 and 2014, they worked very hard to do that. And what happened is they developed about 35 vaccines, and four of them were really promising. They chose the four most promising, and they gave them to ferrets, which is the animal that is most analogous to human beings when it comes to upper lung respiratory infections. The ferrets had a brilliant, robust, and durable antibody response. But then something horrible happened. And those ferrets were challenged when they were exposed to the wild virus. They got horribly sick. They got inflammation throughout their bodies, and they died. Yeah. And the scientists remembered that something very similar had happened in the 1960s, where they had developed a vaccine for RSV, which is very similar to coronavirus. It's an upper respiratory infection ailment. They had skipped the animals and given them directly to 35 children. And the children, again, had developed a very robust antibody response. But when those children were exposed to the wild virus, they got very, very sick, much sicker than unvaccinated children. Two of those kids had died. It was a scandal. And they realized when the same thing happened with the ferrets, that there was something that they called enhanced immune response. It's also called pathogenic priming. And what it means is that when you get the vaccine, it appears that you have an antibody response, but when you actually encounter the wild virus, you become much sicker. And it actually creates a pathway that virus hurts you a lot more than with unvaccinated people. So this was 2012.
Very important clip. Now, moving forward, this is shared actually by this shared actually really great video by Amazing Polly on BitChute, talking about really kind of highlighting the dissidence of what's going on right now. Well worth your time. I'm only going to show you a couple examples here that are important. One, she points out that this is from the Toronto Sun. Again, this is December 4th, so even the beginning of December, saying limits may be placed on unvaccinated Ontarians, according to Dr. David Williams. Saying residents of Ontario who refuse to be vaccinated for COVID-19, right, as we're seeing all of these crazy things happening, despite the fact that you as a free individual should be able to say you don't, it's your body and you don't want anything put in your body that you don't agree with. But not today, according, apparently because fear, because danger, without proving it. He's saying that you may face some limits if you refuse it. Someone may have to show proof of vaccination, he said. Uh-oh, you mean that fake news thing that's never going to happen, according to Twitter? For instance, to enter a nursing home or hospital without personal protection equipment, he said. Proof might also be required to attend school, although no decision has been made yet. So now you might have to prove this to even go to school. Quote, not that someone is going to be forced to take it against their will. Oh, of course not, of course not. They always fall over themselves to say that, as then they then reiterate exactly that. We don't see there's a need for that because our vaccine products have been proven historically to be the best thing we have. Okay, so we don't have a need for that because we believe they're good? That's not an argument. That's basically saying that if we don't take it, we're stupid, which is what they're trying to push. But guys, it's all in front of us. In every possible country you can look at, that's going along with the agenda, they are openly talking about, just like Fauci was, that it's on the table, that we are considering this idea if we don't reach what we are trying to reach, even though it seems they're taking actions to ensure they don't reach it. Funny how that works. Well, in Ontario specifically, the same people we're talking about here, here Ontario health official Dr. Barbara Yaffe responding to a hot mic snafu. She says, I don't know why I bring these papers. I never look at them. I just say whatever they write down for me. This is a health official who's claiming in front of what were supposed to be off microphones that she just says what the politicians tell her to say. But they're supposed to be the ones listening to her. He says, whenever you give the numbers, then he responds by saying, whenever you give the numbers, I go, oh, 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 oh. Like they're laughing about how they put on a show to pretend like they're doing something new when all they're doing is just doing what they're told. It says, I agree, Dr. Williams and Barbara Yass' video deserves to be everywhere. For me, that's the end. Kicking a castle of sand. This is not about a virus. Wake up and watch out. They both laugh, and it sounds like Williams agrees. It says, Barbara's comments about the paper is about it being useless to be prepared for scientific or medically oriented questions that never happen. Instead, they get exactly the kinds of questions that comms people have anticipated. Both David and Barbara suck at the political theater. So their argument is that because basically they're saying that they just stand prepared and they have people that write these things down for them. And that's what she's joking about. But that is obviously not what she's saying. He's saying, I just read what they write for me. You can't argue that that doesn't mean exactly what it sounds like. In a statement to CTV News Toronto, Yaffe downplayed the incident, saying she speaks freely during these briefings. So just by coming out and saying the opposite, we're supposed to go, oh, okay. Usually candid moments are far more truthful. She says the papers she was referencing are research-invented remarks brought to her by her communications team, and they usually include a new number of cases and death reports to Ontario for that particular day. Okay, let's remember what she said. I just read what they write down for me. Still doesn't, it's no less alarming after she says that. Quote, my comments overheard on a live microphone before the briefing were my bantering with Dr. Williams. Of course I do speak freely and have no notes for responding for questions to the media. Okay, so just because you literally state the opposite doesn't mean you didn't say it. There's no justification for what. So were you kidding? Doesn't get into that. Every time Doug Ford gets to a microphone and says he is listening to the advice of all these various experts, it rings hollow because the evidence is starting to really pile up that it's not happening. That's the point, right? That the evidence shows you that they're not doing it. So all this does is confirm for us what we were already worried about. That's what it does.
Government's been trying for almost 30 years.
Dang it. I keep forgetting about that, guys. My apologies.
I don't know why I bring all these papers. I never look at them.
Oh, when you're giving numbers, I do. I go, oh, oh, oh. Sorry, I said that. Did you really say that?
I just say whatever they write down for me.
That's why you're guessing.
I mean, you know, it just seems pretty clear. But as always, take it for what you will. Come to your own conclusions about it, because that's really what matters. But the point is, again, that the evidence backs up what she just accidentally admitted. That the science is not leading where this is going. Not at all, in fact. And I think that's pretty damn clear.
People, so this was 2012.
I don't know why.
People. So this was 2012. In 2014, NIH under Fauci developed a dengue vaccine, which had some signals in it that there was pathogenic priming. In other words, in the clinical trials, they saw some signs that you could get an antibody response but get much sicker when you were exposed, but they ignored them. They gave it to the Philippines, and they gave hundreds of thousands of children this vaccine. And when the dengue came around, those children became horribly ill, and 600 of them died. And in the Philippines today, people are being criminally prosecuted for that. So the danger with the coronavirus vaccine is that you really need to test it on animals first to make sure whatever the vaccine is, that we don't get that, you know, that really great immune response followed by lethal infections.
Exactly.
And it's very, very strange to me and seems almost criminally reckless that Anthony Fauci is allowing these companies to skip animal trials and to go directly to human trials.
I agree with that completely. And here's the point. As you can see, Kamala Harris, you know, bravely getting this, of course, we're assuming that I don't believe for a second that half these people are actually doing it, but that's just my opinion. It says, I trust the scientists, she says. It is the scientists who created and approved this. This is the scientism, right? That we if the scientists trust her, right? If it's a woman, you believe her, right? Believe women. Remember that? Right? Believe women until it went the other way around, and then we don't believe what those allegations about Biden, because that's not true. Right? It's all of whatever works for them in the moment. Now it's trust the scientists because they are desperate to make sure you trust what they tell you is the science. Not actually what the science is, but I trust the scientists, she says. It is the scientists who created and approved this vaccine, which is not actually even accurate in a lot of ways. I urge everyone, when it's your turn, get vaccinated. Right? Like you're like a school mom telling you what to do. U.S. Vice President-elect Kamala Harris gets her vaccine. And as I said, well, we trusted the scientists in 1976 and with the anthrax vaccine and with the H1N1 vaccine in 2009, all of which hurt lots of people. We're not tested properly and we're dishonestly justified. Why was the trust with all of those vaccines any different? Why should we listen now? You won't get an answer, though. Because if you say these things, you're a conspiracy theorist. Who cares if they're all wildly documented and easy to look up? We trusted them in every instance, and every time it comes back that they were lying to us. But of course, we should trust the scientists, you know? Well, here's what the scientists were saying about themselves in 2011. I've read this before, but I want to make sure we understand that this is how they perceived even their own coverage of 2009. But even now, they'll point back to 2009 as an example of how we saved everybody, even though it turned out to be fake. It was not really happening. Just like with the 1976 example of the same swine flu lie. This has been a ploy that they've continued to try to implement. This is a big one. But here's what they said. This is the WHO. The repeated pandemic health scares caused by the avian H5N1 and the new H1N1 are part of the culture of fear. Worst case thinking replaced balanced risk assessment. Right. Yeah, that's exactly what we're talking about. But see, when they pointed this out, what happened was they just got rid of the people who were pointing it out and got people that were willing to ignore it. It says worst case thinking is motivated by the belief that danger we face is so overwhelmingly catastrophic that we must act immediately rather than wait for information. We need a preemptive strike. Exactly what's happening. But if resources buy lives, wasting resources wastes lives. The precautionary stocking of the largely useless antivirals and the irrational vaccination policies against an unusually benign H1N1 virus, this is the WHO, don't forget, wasted many billions of euros and eroded the trust of the public in health officials. But didn't they just tell us that 2009 was what we should emulate? Wait, that doesn't make sense. Oh, that's right, because these are the facts, and that's politicians and the media saying what the facts are. Don't you see how that's working? The same thing they do when they want to tell you the science. It's not what the science is, it's what they want you to think it is. These are the facts. When they talk about H1, they tell you what they want you to think the facts are. They're lying to you. That's what that means. It says the pandemic policy was never informed by evidence. Never informed by evidence, but by fear of worst case scenarios. How do we not see that's happening now? And they're abusing that now. It says in both pandemics of fear, the exaggerated claims of a severe public health threat stemmed primarily from disease advocacy by influenza experts who had aggressive conflicts of interest. In the highly competitive market of health governance, the struggle for attention, budgets, and grants is fierce. The pharmaceutical industry and the media only reacted to this welcome boon. We therefore need fewer, not more, pandemic preparedness plans or definitions. Oh, fire this guy. Get rid of this guy because he's exposing our ploy. Because we realize this didn't happen. They did the opposite of what this is saying. It says with vested interest in it says the vertical influenza planned in the face of speculative catastrophes is a recipe for repeated waste of resources and health scares. Repeated health scares induced by influenza experts with vested interest in exaggeration. I almost can't believe that this is still even up. There is no reason for expecting any upcoming pandemic to be worse than the mild ones of 1957 or 1968. No wonder these people aren't around anymore. No reason for striking preemptively. No reason for believing that a proportional and balanced response would risk lives. The opposite of preemptive strikes against worst-case scenarios are adaptive strategies that respond to emerging diseases of any nature based on the evidence of observed virulence and the effectiveness of control measures. This requires more generic capacity for disease surveillance. Problem identification, risk assessment. It says resources are scarce and need to be allocated by many competing priorities. But bottom line, the point, guys, is that they are clearly telling you the problem we're seeing now. They're saying, look, they didn't look at the evidence. They're using fear and there's pharmaceutical influence. And this is a problem. 10 years later, same exact thing. How can that be? I think you know why. Now, here is another discussion of the same thing. This is from the British Medical Journal. WHO and the pandemic flu conspiracies. Key scientists advising the WHO on planning for an influenza pandemic had done paid work for pharmaceutical firms that stood to gain from the guidance they wrote. The conflicts of interest have never been publicly disclosed by the WHO. Here we are. Do we not see the reality of how this was built? It says right here, a joint investigation by the BMJ and the Bureau of Investigative Journalism has uncovered evidence that raises troubling questions about how WHO managed conflicts of interest among the scientists who advised its pandemic planning and about the transparency of the science underlying its advice to governments. That's really important. Was it appropriate for WHO to take advice from experts who had declarable financial and research ties with pharmaceutical companies producing antivirals? And the people making the vaccines that were then justified by the declared pandemic? Obviously, that's not okay. Well, and only now is it even being revealed. Not now, but this is in 2010. It says, why was the key WHO guidance authored by an influenza expert who had received payment for other work from Roche, a manufacturer of a drug they're using, and GlaxoSmithKline, manufacturers of another drug they're using? And why does the composition of the emergency committee from which Chan sought guidance remain a secret known only to those within the WHO? Because this is an agenda. They're clearly building this, and they're trying to keep it secret because they know what they're doing is wrong and dishonest. We are left wondering whether major public health organizations are able to effectively manage the conflicts of interest that are inherent in medical science. No, they're not. And we see that. They're captured agencies, just like the FDA, just like the CDC. This has been a planned, measured agenda, an effort that's been happening right in front of us. All the evidence has been there for us to see, and we just continue to keep it going. It's crazy. Plenty more to get in here too, but I don't want to make this take too long. Maybe I'll revisit this document. I've said that before, actually, but there's a lot in here. There's a lot to talk about, including specific people and so on. But I will follow up on this again because there's plenty more for examples, but I know this is already going quite long. As I pointed out yesterday, talking about the vaccines, right? And even more so, talking about the literal influenza lie, the idea that they're using influenza to create a culture of fear, right? So consider this meme, because this is really happening now. It says the CDC says the flu is almost non-existent, which, by the way, before I even get there, just so we can bolster the point, here is Dr. Chris Mackey, somebody who I hope if you're using him as a doctor that you run screaming. In other news, flu, normally a major killer of people who are older and medically at risk, remains at zero cases in London. Zero. So I was going, yay, finally a doctor is going to point out the truth. But he goes, nope, more proof that public health measures for COVID are effective at preventing the spread of illness. Yeah, zero, right? That's the same argument of saying 100% effective. That's really stupid. Nobody would believe zero. That's just stupid. I mean, that doesn't make any sense, especially since literally every year for as long as you can look back, at least so we're told, there's been flu all over the place. That just because, and by the way, we're going to get into points that actually counter the concept that the lockdowns, the masks are in fact doing anything, if not increasing all these problems. But this doctor is literally telling you that that's because we're doing such a good job. And as Pauly also points out, when ideologues interpret data, exactly, right? But back to the point, because this, now that I've showed you what he says, it'll make this seem even more ridiculous. So the CDC right now is no joke saying the flu is almost gone, non-existent this year, because of wearing masks and social distancing. right? So if you're, because you're doing that so well that it's just the flu's gone, as the doctor said, right? Because your actions are just, are so strong. But they're also saying that COVID-19 is out of control because no one is wearing masks and social distancing. Now, those are both being stated right now by the CDC. How in the world can that be? Because it's a COVID clown world. That's why. Pretty clear. Because you can't have, it doesn't make sense that you can say that the absence of that thing is causing something and then claim that the thing is there now and that's why something else is happening. A child could see that that doesn't make sense. But not Dr. Chris Mackey. But here's the point, again, that I've shown a few times, is that, right, this is where we are today. As of the latest update from December 19, 2020 from the CDC website. Just scroll up. I was going to scroll up real quick so you could see it. CDC, all right? COVID view. I've shown this a few times, but for those that haven't seen it, right? Here's where we are right now. You can go, and you can even go back to, let me move that over. There we go. Go back to November. November, see the dates right here, by the way. Okay, so November 14th, November. I mean, you got one little weird spike in Iowa, which, by the way, that probably shows you that Iowa just happened to not do what they were told. They didn't suppress the numbers into COVID, and it had a weird spike out of nowhere. That's what that said. That's what I would argue that means. But it's just nothing, right? Nothing all the way into December. But if you go back to last year, dang it, it's going to freeze on me. If you go back to last year, you will see that it's much, much, much more severe. But in the meantime, let's find something that you can watch. Here's a good one. And I remembered this. Oh, wait, we got it. There we go. So here it is right now. Or this was the same time last year. 2019, 2020. Here's November. Here's December, right where we are now. So how can you argue that this is what was happening last year, and yet this is where we are right now in the same time frame, or, you know, coming up to where we are now? You can't, because the point is, this shows you that there's a problem. If these things are working, then it would work for COVID-19. No, but that's not the point. They're not. Nothing is working as they claim it is. What they're doing is gaming the numbers. As I always show you, for those that aren't aware of this, they combine pneumonia, influenza, and COVID-19. It says it right here. PIC mortality, pneumonia, influenza, and COVID-19. And they use those numbers to continue to state that it's above epidemic threshold. Potentially over 100,000 deaths for pneumonia and flu that are being jammed in with COVID-19. And even then, we're still not as a high number as they want it to be. That doesn't make any sense. And here's why. Why has the flu disappeared? It says on April 4th, 2020, and this is just really a reiteration of what I've been saying, but it's written well, was the last week in season preliminary burden estimates were provided in regard to flu. The CDC wrote on its 2019-2020 U.S. flu season webpage, the reason the estimates stopped in April is because flu cases plummeted so low that they're hardly worth tracking. In an update posted December 3rd, it says the model used to generate influenza in-season preliminary burden estimates uses current flu season flu hospitalization data. Reported flu hospitalizations are too low at this time to generate even an estimate. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. While the cases rise in COVID, it says in late summer 2020, warnings surfaced that there might soon be a twindemic. Remember that? Remember all the panic about the twindemic of flu and COVID simultaneously? And that's what they're using. They just are not showing you that they're both. That would decimate the globe. So far, this hasn't panned out. In the U.S., the CDC reported that the percentage of respiratory specimens submitted for influenza testing that test positive decreased from greater than 20% to 2.3%. Yeah, right. Since the start of the pandemic. Anybody believe that? As of September 18, 2020, they noted that positive influenza tests have, quote, remained at historically low intersectional levels, 0.02 versus 1 to 2%. Further, from September 29, 2019, February 29, 2020, to March 1, May 16, 2020, the CDC noted a 98% decrease in flu activity. 98%. And are we going to pretend like lockdowns and masks and all that stuff was happening at full blow in March and May? Guys, this is dumb. There's no way this makes any sense other than these numbers are being redirected. And guess what? That's happened before. That's happened well before this. John Rappaport used to point this out in regard to flu that they would combine pneumonia with flu back before and make the flu look more severe, right? This is exactly what they've always done. They've always been gaming the numbers because this has always been an agenda. Similar drops have been observed worldwide, and including, and this is what lends the credence to the idea this is a much larger thing than we realize, or probably what we all realize, including in the Southern Hemisphere countries of Australia, Chile, Southern Africa, which often serves as sentinels for the influenza activity in the U.S. They've all had massive drops, and of course, have all had spikes in COVID too. All three areas had very low influenza activity during June to August 2020, which is their peak flu season. Now, I want to point something out I just thought about too, is that realize there are plenty of states in the United States that are having essentially no real COVID outbreaks either, right? Some places that aren't really wearing masks or social distancing, but the flu's not there. We just showed you, the flu's not anywhere, according to the CDC, right? So doesn't that not make sense even with their current logic? The idea is that if it's the actions because of COVID that are reducing flu to zero, the places that aren't taking those actions should have an increase in flu, right? They don't. It's just one of those pesky logic points they don't want you thinking about because it's not about logic. But it says all three areas had very low influenza activity during June to August 2020, which is their peak flu season. From April to July 2020, only 33 influenza positive test results were detected in Australia. 33. 12 in Chile, 6 in South Africa, for a total of 51 positive tests in all three countries. For comparison, during April to July in 2017 to 2019, 24,512 tested positive. Just a minor decrease, don't you think? It was initially thought that the steep drops in influenza activity were due to decreasing testing. Since people, that would make the idea that they wouldn't even want to find it is another way to look at it. Since people with respiratory symptoms likely receive COVID tests. Exactly. So they're getting a test with a high prevalence of false positives, being told they have it, and those symptoms get deemed COVID regardless. And then when they have pneumonia and flu even later, they just go, well, it's because of the COVID though, even though they never proved they had it in the first place. However, according to the CDC, public health officials have made a concerted effort to test for flu. And even though, quote, adequate numbers have been tested, they're claiming the flu is just not there. I don't know why anybody would take this at face value with everything that we know about these people. I mean, with what they write about themselves, right? A culture of fear based on misinformation and fear, and what they say, worst case thinking replacing balanced risk assessment. But I'm a conspiracy theorist for pointing this out. Trying to find the right page here so I don't lose it. There we go. In Australia, meanwhile, they tested markedly more specimens for influenza this season than usual, yet still detected very flu cases whatsoever. So what happened to it? Well, as they point out, which is what I've been telling you since the moment this started, the COVID deaths the CDC have been reporting are actually a combination of pneumonia, flu, and COVID-19 deaths under a new category listed as PIC. It's not even a secret. They just hope you don't notice it. Their COVID view, or rather, they hope you assume that there's logic for what they're doing. The COVID view webpage, and I should say the reason they would argue is because they're secondary reactions, but that would mean that there's those and then also just normal flu and influenza and pneumonia that happen elsewhere, but they're zeroed out basically. So that doesn't make sense. Because there are secondary reactions of, you know, someone can get COVID and then the COVID could cause the flu or so on. That does happen. But even then, I argue that you should separate those out, period. You know, if one kills them, it should be the other that they mark down, not COVID. You can leave it secondary, but you should not count those in the death tolls that are being used to argue this is crazy dangerous, right? You can't have someone die in a car accident and say COVID-19 just because you want to err on the side of caution and then arrest people for not doing it when you know you're basically falsifying the numbers. But it says the COVID View webpage, which provides a weekly summary, states the levels of SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19 and associated illnesses, have been increasing since September 2020, with the percentage of deaths due to pneumonia and flu and COVID have been on the rise. It says, but as noted by Professor William M. Briggs, a statistical consultant and policy advisor at the Heartland Institute, a free market think tank, in the video above, CDC up until about July 2020 counted flu and pneumonia deaths separately. Been doing this forever, then just mysteriously stopped. It's become very difficult to tell the difference between these, referring to the combined tracking of deaths from PIC. They're even using PIC, as I said, to state that the cases are above epidemic threshold. So this is a doctor telling you this doesn't make sense. Based on death certificate data, the percentage of deaths attributed to PIC for week 49 remains above the epidemic threshold. They're lying to you. And remember, this is an obvious example. A great Swiss Policy Research, which I recommend that you take, you know, keep your eye on, because they're doing great work during all of this, being objective and actually reporting facts, why COVID-19 is a strange pandemic, right? And this is something that should have been everywhere. And because they're worried this will make you realize that it may not be what they say it is, they just simply ignored it, which is not what actual journalists are supposed to do. Why does COVID-19 appear to be somewhat a strange pandemic? Well, because the COVID-19 mortality profile is almost identical to natural mortality, which means, as they say, yes, it does increase your risk of death, but no more than stepping out your front door, right? When you step out your front door, you could be hit by a car, you could be a tree could fall on you, anything could happen. So there's a risk of death when you step out your door. There's a risk of death when you open your eyes in the morning. So what they're saying is that's natural mortality, that you have a general risk and that you're going to die at some point anyway. They're saying that COVID-19 risk basically is identical to that normal mortality, meaning that you're really not at any more risk. There is some risk that's added, but not really any more than risk that you already have when you step out your front door. I mean, that's unbelievable that this is not bigger news. And then again, it points out that the 2009 swine flu was a fake, dang it, don't want to open that, a fake pandemic, because in reality, it was a rather mild flu that caused few deaths globally, but they still made vaccines, pushed on the military, they still caused panic, they still drove up sales of other kinds of drugs, and all of it happened. It wasn't real. Only because the WHO had removed the requirement of enormous numbers of deaths and illness 1 month before. So they gamed the numbers just like they're doing now. And that's because the people that were actually going, hey, we shouldn't do those things, were clearly pushed to the side because they want to keep doing those things. But it points out that the mortality profile of COVID-19 coronavirus is essentially zero for children and younger adults and nearly zero below 50, right? You would never hear that from the media because they want you to think you're in danger all the time. Near zero below 50. Before it begins to rise slowly and then steeply above 70. And these are all especially and more particularly if you've got comorbidities. But it says, thus, the COVID-19 mortality profile is almost identical to natural mortality. This doesn't mean that it doesn't increase your risk. It does. But this increase is proportional to the pre-existing risk of death of the respective age and risk group, meaning you're at the same risk you are from living your life, which they've stolen from you. So now you're actually at more risk from all the other things they're toppling on top of all of this. That's they're causing all of these problems. It says the high death rate in nursing homes, up to 70% of the deaths in people above 70. 70% of deaths in nursing homes, and 90% of those were over 70. But let's pretend like we're all in danger. Because of the COVID-19 mortality profile, mass PCR testing and contact tracing in the general population make little sense and create an additional case-demic. There's a reason they don't talk about these. On top of the pandemic, mass vaccinations will also make rather little sense, especially because at the time, experimental vaccines might become available, which is what they are. Many people may already have been exposed to the wild virus, which is exactly what's already happened, if you believe it's happening at all. This is a reputable outlet that would otherwise be pointed to if they were saying what they wanted them to say. That's pretty crazy and very revealing. Shoot. All right, let's play that other video. Same thing on vaccines.
We dug up this clip. Melissa found this clip online somewhere. I could not believe it. This is a sensational, ridiculous, repugnant clip because they just say these things with a straight face, with no reaction, and then they balance them out with just equal time of regurgitated propaganda about how great vaccines are, how good the government is, and how much they're trying to protect you, and especially children.
Today, doctors at the Federal Communicable Disease Center acknowledge the flu vaccine and the recommended dosage is ineffective. While in a larger dose, it can be harmful. However, the flu vaccine is still recommended for old people and the chronically ill. Right here.
Isn't that crazy? I've played the clip before, but so it's dangerous and may not work, but you should still get it. Of course, this has always been where we are. We just need to start waking up and seeing it. Here is a member of the London Assembly, the Heritage Party leader, pointing out this article, saying that there's strong evidence of a correlation between injections of flu vaccines and COVID-19 deaths. Which is, remember, something we pointed out in the beginning, that was, oh, you're not allowed to say that, despite the evidence very clearly pointing to an increased risk of infections and other, and else, and there was a lot involved in that. James Corbett did a great video breaking down all the different points, but the Pentagon study very clearly included the concept of coronaviruses. Yes, this was before we were told of COVID-19, but it doesn't change the fact that that's exactly what would have been included if it had been there. 36% higher chance. Now, this, of course, was he posted the Gateway Pundit, which I'm not a huge fan of, to be honest, but there's things that I've seen that I just don't think were done well. But here's what they say, and then I'll show you the actual study. Using the EU publication Vaccines Today, we gathered data on flu vaccination coverage in older people and compared these to overall COVID-19 mortality from the United Nations database, Worldometer, which we've shown. We are unable to update vaccines. So the point is, you can see, as I pointed out with Derek the other day, I mean, exactly down the line. The people who had higher vaccinations of flu correlates almost exactly with people who had more deaths for COVID-19. Just a correlation. Doesn't always mean causation, but it's very interesting. You combine that. Like, actually, if you look at Malta, there's, I would argue, a discrepancy, right? Malta's only got 14 deaths per million, but it looks like they were higher, right? It's not exact, but there's very clearly an interesting correlation with more vaccination and higher deaths. And then you combine that with the Pentagon study, and it seems to make a lot of sense. It says, in May, we found that the countries with highest death rates had all vaccinated at least half of their elderly population against the flu. Denmark and Germany, with lower use of the flu vaccine, had considerably lower COVID-19 mortality. But, you know, if you don't like the publication, here's the actual study. Positive association between COVID-19 death and influenza vaccination rates in elderly people worldwide. Now, one of the reasons why I could tell you right now that I'm not a big fan of the site is because you won't find this link in that article, unless I missed it, which is possible. Most people just don't want you to have the source material because they want you to listen to them. That's the difference, right? People out there screaming, they have the answer. Don't listen to anybody. They're all a bunch of shills for China or whatever else. These are people that are trying to get you to them. Look at me. I'm the one. The point is that it's about the information. The source, the links are in my show. For all, you don't even have to watch the show. As long as you go through and look at the links and research them for yourself. That's all I care about. Because it's not about me. Positive association between COVID-19 deaths and influenza vaccination rates. Here's what it says. Now, the influenza vaccination rate is IVR, and the results showed a positive association between COVID-19 death and influenza vaccination rate of people over 65 years old. There is a significant increase in COVID-19 deaths from eastern to western regions in the world. Additional work on this line of research may lead to prevention of deaths associated with COVID-19. So also, they're finding a correlation here. There's clearly an association between people dying from COVID and people getting the higher vaccination rate of the flu, especially with people over 65. There's a significant increase, it says, in COVID deaths from eastern to western regions in the world due to the vaccination rates of the flu. But it's still fake news because somebody on some channel said so. Right? I mean, this is where we are, that they won't address the study. And if I point to the study, they reference some crazy post on one platform that makes some ridiculous picture of what we're actually reporting. It's exactly what we just talked about with Fauci and the discussion of mass and bacterial pneumonia. I'm not talking about Fauci claiming that in a study. That's irrelevant to the discussion, but that's what they'll point to and say, you're fake news because he didn't even say that in 2008. I didn't even talk about that. The point is that the science very clearly shows that it's plainly obvious that you can catch something such as bacterial pneumonia or create the conditions to cause it by wearing a mask, especially in the middle of a cold winter. But don't just trust me. Look at the data. The show is right there on my website. Do masks cause bacterial pneumonia? I leave it up to you to decide after looking at the information. But speaking of masks, here is a post, thank you, Ian, for sharing this, from the WHO themselves. Now let's go directly to the page. Here it says, this is from December 1st. Okay. So this is not some old guidance from last year, which by the way, would still be relevant because no new evidence has really come around showing anything different. And that's what they admit right in this document. Right here, it says evidence on the protective effects of mask use in communities. Now, right off the bat, let's make sure we're clear that what they're trying to claim, kind of like it, when it suits their agenda, is that it's only about protecting your grandma. It's not about protecting you, which is literally the opposite of what everybody everywhere says, right? The idea of wearing it is because they want you, want, you know, they're trying to protect them, keeping yourself safe. That's why you see someone walking down the street by themselves wearing a mask. They think that's protecting them because the media and everybody else has made sure that that's what they took from it. So this is about literally the protective effect of masks in any sense. Here's what it says directly from the WHO. At present, there is only limited and inconsistent in scientific evidence to support the effectiveness of masking of healthy people in the community to prevent infection with respiratory viruses, including SARS-CoV-2. So remember the whole thing, how we're not supposed to challenge the WHO? Well, here's the WHO saying that they do not have enough evidence to suggest that it actually is right to mask healthy people. And that's a sentence, a statement right off the bat. It's not the rest of what follows, and I'll give you the gist of the rest of it, including what they follow up after this first paragraph, because that's one of the first things in this is they're going, you can't just share that one little piece. Well, he shares the link right beneath it, so calm down. Right? The point is, you can't, it's missing. That sentence in and of itself is clear. That is a statement. The rest of it following is after that. The statement they made first, at present, this is involving everything they list afterward on either side of the argument. There is only limited and inconsistent scientific evidence to support the effectiveness of masking healthy people in the community to prevent infections. Okay? That's exactly what every other random control trial says that I keep showing you. There is not a statistically significant difference in transmission. They don't want you to know this. This is what the WHO is saying themselves. Now, it goes on to say, this is the first part, a large randomized community-based trial, and I already talked about this. I've talked about most of these, in fact, in which 4,862 healthy participants were divided into a group wearing medical / surgical masks and a control group found no difference in infection with SARS-CoV-2. That's a big deal. And these are the large randomized controlled trials, like the gold standard, right? Which will contrast with the things they follow up with. But that's why they're listing these first. And that's why their first statement, which their conclusion based on everything else below it, is that there is limited and inconsistent scientific evidence, period. That's not only in relation to this first paragraph. It says a recent systematic review found 9 trials, of which 8 were randomized controlled trials. Huge. In which clusters of people versus individuals were randomized, comparing medical surgical masks versus no masks to prevent the spread of this, of respiratory illness. 2 trials were with healthcare workers and 7 in the community. The review concluded that wearing a mask may make little or no difference to the prevention of influenza-like illness, which is COVID-19, or laboratory-confirmed illness. The certainty of the evidence was low. Okay, that's or moderate for this, basically not enough to suggest there's anything happening. That is the first part. The sentence is still the sentence that they have limited and inconsistent scientific evidence. But then it follows up. Now remember that those were 9 random controlled trials, a huge random controlled trial in regard to thousands of people. But then it says, by contrast, a small retrospective cohort study from Beijing basically found that they claim 37% effective in transmission. But this specific study, which I've already talked about, it shows you the inclusion of other things. There's reasons why these are not random controlled trials. One is the fact that they almost always include hand washing and social distancing with the percentage. And that is not how you do that. Because those things will affect the outcome. And that's why when you remove them, you find that they have no statistical significance. And that's what they all find. My point is that the contrast, as this lady, my point was, there's someone below here screaming, you know, you can't share a tiny piece of data, which is in it. It's that the point is what they said first. But I'll keep going. A case control study from Thailand found that wearing a medical, non-medical mask all the time associated with a 77% lower risk. All right. These are none of these are random controlled trials. Okay. That's the point. A number of studies, some peer-reviewed, but most published at preprints, right? So not the goal, not even close, reported a decline in COVID cases associated with face mask usage by the public using country, and this one specifically included other actions. I've already covered most of these, by the way. Now, I could keep going. I don't want, there's plenty more to get into, but if you go through all these, they do point out, but back and forth, they point out, the point is that this first paragraph is the bulk of the evidence, and they say, and this first sentence, again, is in regard to all of it. They're saying that all of these other ones are limited and inconsistent. That's what they said right there. This is the WHO telling you that there's not enough evidence to suggest that you wearing a mask if you're healthy does anything in regard to transmission or infection. That's what it says right there. Okay, so here's another one to add on top of that. Gosh darn it. And before I do that, Before we get to that very important discussion, let's make sure. Oh, no, there we go. We got it. Okay. Swiss policy research. Now, this is, again, really important. This is one that I suggest that you keep saved because this was published on July 30th, but they update it regularly. This was updated December 15th. Are face masks effective? The evidence. All of it. Studies on the effectiveness of face masks. Okay, I'm only going to read their findings, and I'm going to hope that you will go through and read all of the source material. And again, I went through most of this. I would say easily 60% of these I've already shown you. But nonetheless, I hope you will take the time to go through it. Like, here's the Danish study that, you know, is being disparaged. There's a lot of it, though. 10 different studies, be it British Medical Journal, New England Journal of Medicine. I mean, this is the point. It says that the conclusion that cloth masks offer little to no protection, right? These are the people we're supposed to be listening to, so they tell us. Oxford Center, okay, point. So far, most studies found little to no evidence the effectiveness of cloth masks in the general population, which the 90%+ of people are wearing because the CDC told them to, neither as personal protective equipment nor as source control. So it doesn't protect your grandma, doesn't protect you. And there are clear negative medical side effects, health side effects, I mean, which this document will show you, but I've already shown you countless times over. And below every post on my website on The Last American Vagabond, every post, I include all the mask studies because they show you that there are measurable reductions in blood oxygen level. 5 different studies from the NIH, National Library of Medicine, British Medical Journal, they all find that there's headaches, blood oxygen level issues, dizziness, and on and on and on from wearing masks for as little as 4 hours. But hopefully you'll read this stuff for yourself. Development of cases after mask mandates. In many states, coronavirus infections strongly increased after mask mandates had been introduced. Del Bigtree pointed this out. The following charts show the typical examples of Austria, Belgium, France, Germany, Ireland, Italy, and on and on and on. And you can see. Oh, this is the, so red is no mask required. Isn't that interesting? Black is mask required. That's a really good one. That's a good one right there, right? That's very clear. That's all of them with each other. But here we go. Australia, COVID-19 cases, they require masks. You see a huge spike. Belgium, mask, huge spike. Same thing on all of them. Masks, and then you see a huge spike. Now, that doesn't mean that there's not other things that could happen, but it simply shows you that masks are not, there's no statistical effect according to all of the information. And again, look, every one of these are backed up by numerous sites. Now, we've seen this video. This is Dr. Theodore Noel showing you that this comes right out the sides and, you know, whatever else. And this is claiming face masks are effective. It says some recent studies argued that cloth face masks are indeed effective against the new coronavirus, and could at least prevent the infection of other people. However, most of these studies suffer from poor methodology and sometimes show the opposite of what they claim. Good. Glad there's somebody honest out here pointing out what we've been saying from the beginning. That they, like The Lancet, has been called out by plenty of experts saying, you guys, the studies you point to don't even say what you claim they do. But it says, typically, these studies ignore the effect of other measures, the natural development of infection numbers changing in the test activity, or they compare countries with very different conditions. So the studies even, they're calling out, saying that they are not accurate. Risks associated with face masks. Wearing masks for a prolonged period of time is not harmless. According to Swiss Policy Research, as the following evidence shows, and I've shown you almost all of these, I believe, but you should go through and look at them nonetheless. Side effects such as difficulty breathing, on and on and on. And I'm not going to bring them up now. I show them all the time. It'll probably freeze my screen, but they're already included on the link to the video on The Last American Vagabond. This, as well as all the other ones I show you, all the five that show you very real side effects that cause harm, as well as the fact that cloth masks are very clearly shown in the only random controlled trial of cloth masks to dramatically increase your risk of infection. But let's pretend like that's not causing anything. But their conclusion, cloth face masks in general population might be effective, at least in some circumstances, but there is currently little to no evidence supporting this proposition. Now, what they're saying right there is, yes, cloth masks may be effective in some way, right? Like for a doctor wearing it in open surgery so they don't spit into an open wound, right? They have uses. That's why they've been around, at least some circumstances. But even those, there's currently little to no evidence supporting it. And anyone honest will see that and point it out, as they're doing here. Is this a fringe weirdo conspiracy theory website? No, this is a respected policy research. This is a respected outlet that posts the things that are pointed to by these same people when they say what they want them to say. If the SARS-CoV-2 virus is indeed transmitted via indoor aerosols, which is the point, and that's why they're saying that, because it's not droplets, it's aerosolized particulates. If it is indeed indoor aerosols, cloth masks are unlikely to be protective. Health authorities should therefore not assume or suggest that cloth face masks will reduce the rate of infection or risk. What do you know? I really hope you will take the time to go through these. I'm going to keep this and keep referencing it as we go forward. But it's an illusion, guys. It's an illusion. As he points out here, and this is a great point. I don't even know how to pronounce that name. So it's somebody that I see all the time, one of our community, a good researcher here. If it was a real pandemic, then why aren't face masks disposed in biowaste containers by law instead of the ocean? Or the ground, or the beach, or the sidewalk. Think about how dumb that is. If this is actually, and we already got all the studies that show you how much actually accumulates on the outside and the inside of the mask, if this was what they said it was, those would be horrible. I mean, that would be spreading this thing like crazy. Maybe that's what they want to happen. I mean, at the end of the day, that is ridiculous. And if that was anything like, I mean, think of any other example of biomaterial that's, when I worked in a restaurant, if somebody had a nosebleed, you have to close off the whole area, put on actual like hazmat stuff, and sweep the stuff up into a certain bag and deliver it. I'm not kidding. That's how we dealt with that in a normal setting, and yet we're wearing masks in the biggest pandemic in the century, so we're told, and people can just throw them on the ground and no one cares. Seems pretty unrealistic. This makes a little more sense about why. As Ice Age Farmer, someone you should be following, points out, Walmart security cameras now alert you if you're not wearing a face mask. Grocery stores are becoming the AI commissaries, and food will be used to enforce compliance. Grow your own food. I agree. Stop shopping here. I agree. But look at that. Takes it off. Gets it. Put it back on. Goes away. Clearly. Remember what what's his name from the iconic podcast pointed out at the end of the show the other day? Clearly that they are using this to train the algorithm. Certainly a thought, but something you should consider for yourself. Finally, to wrap up here, I want to make sure you saw this and the idea of the lockdowns and how this is being used against you and coming from people that you should not be trusting. 4.4 million views. This is in Canada. I want to point out that this is because a neighbor snitched on a party of people who were having a small gathering of six people for New Year's Eve. Oh, and guess what? That policeman who's coming in to enforce the illegal COVID-19 is not wearing a mask. Right there. That guy right there is not wearing a mask, and he's coming to enforce them not wearing a mask and social distancing. Language warning. Earmuffs, children. So this is simply because they were together. That's it. They weren't doing anything illegal, breaking any law. They were with family on a holiday. Calm down. You kidding me? I gotta be honest. I get quite frustrated with these people that are being trying to like placate the cops. Look at what they're doing to him out there. They have him on the ground in the snow. So now they're closing their door? Do you not realize how crazy that is? That's your house, and they're pushing you in your house and closing your door. Guys, this is unreal. Like, we have to realize how alarming this is. We are watching them create exactly what we've been warning about. Wow.
What are you going to do now? Stay there.
You have the shoes for the girl? You have the shoes?
What?
You have the shoes.
Hey, c'est sûr de là. Come on, guys. Hey, vous n'avez pas le droit de tirer.
Can I just pause and make sure we understand that this is simply because people are gathering on a holiday? Does anybody feel this is justified? I mean, here's a better point. Especially for those out there that are going, well, they shouldn't have got together because they're risking everyone's lives. Okay, so let's just say that was happening and you believe that. You know, ignoring all the facts for a moment. Let's just say that's happening. So do you not think that the cops coming in with no masks and grabbing people, you know, the cops that just came from a populated station or cars that are driving around, you know, that are obviously totally sanitary. Like, let's pretend like there's no cross community. They're coming in their house, touching people, holding people, tackling people and with no masks on. And that's supposed to be more safe. Right? Like, what sense does it make to come in and do exactly what will cause spread, according to them, in order to stop people from doing what will cause spread? It's as dumb as people being forcefully arrested for not social distancing and put in a cell with people who are not social distanced. And the cops need to violate those very rules in order to get him in that cell. They create more problem by doing that than just letting one person do what they were already doing. It's about compliance. And we have to see that. So I also want, you know, think about how alarming it is on top of the fact that this is happening. The media at large, UK, the United States, Western media are actively keeping this kind of stuff from your view. They are actively cultivating what they want to be your worldview around all of this. Shining, happy, positive, great, renew, a new reimagining, and all you got to do is take this experimentally rushed, dangerous thing. Just come along with us in this new future, right? This is what's actually happening. People are starving. People can't feed their families, and they're being attacked and accosted by police who are order followers that have no understanding of their oaths to the Constitution. Well, this is Canada. I mean, same concept, but I'm speaking as an American. Same idea. We're seeing this everywhere. Now realize this is a lockdown in Canada. This is the kind of lockdowns we're seeing, but across the board, they're being justified by this idea of some new dangerous strain. But don't forget, as we already pointed out, that those, it's freezing on me again. Those strains, are even according to the WHO, not shown to be any more dangerous, but they'll happily pounce on it to drive in what they want you to think. And don't forget, that this is all stemming back to Mr. Neil Ferguson here. I mean, from the second time around, as we said here, that NerveTag, the group, the group, new and emerging respiratory virus threats advisory group, were the ones that got together and said that there was not enough evidence. There was not enough evidence to say that this thing was more dangerous, and they recommended doing nothing. right? That it's too early to tell. But then, of course, Ferguson came back in and just said, well, we should all be afraid. And then, of course, Boris Johnson just listened to him, despite the fact that he was catastrophically wrong to start all of it. So he went against the medical advice, the scientific advice of his actual group, the nerve tag group, and went with the guy who already was shown to be wrong. Why would that even happen? But not on top of that. So 3.6% death rate. Everyone's millions are going to die. We're all in so much danger. Clearly that's wrong. That's why everything started. The lockdown started. They claimed that everybody was asymptomatic after we realized that those numbers weren't right. And that's why we had to continue. But that's not true either. We know that according to this study, over 10 million people, that basically zero asymptomatic transmission. So they are locking down and masking healthy people under a guise that they could be at risk or they could be spreaders without knowing it. All of this comes back to people that are known manipulators, people that have been wrong over and over and over. Aside from all of that, here's what the Times did on Christmas. On the day that this guy was responsible for locking down everyone's life and removing their Christmas and then arresting people that did otherwise. This says, Neil Ferguson, people don't agree with lockdown and try to undermine its scientists. After a year, when his advice helped to drive pandemic politics, you mean lead us into a catastrophically false direction? Yes, that's what it means. And his personal life was news. Well, you mean when he violated the lockdown rules that he said we all had to follow? Yeah, I love how they just casually skip over that. Well, guess what? Professor Neil Ferguson says he was mostly right. So let me see, 0.02 to 3.6, yeah, mostly right. You know, only about 3.5, 0.3, it's just mostly right. Like, I can't believe how crazy this is that they're openly trying to propagandize for this guy. They post this on Christmas. Think about how disgusting that is. It says, there was a time in a different world. You know, 10 months ago, a world that shook hands, met relatives, and commuted to work when none of this was obvious. Oh, okay, so we just suddenly realized that all of our worlds had to change in the middle of this thing? That's what they actually are saying there, that we all now have decided that we're not supposed to shake hands, that we shouldn't meet relatives, that commuting to work is dangerous. Now it's obvious, so now we're going to live a different life. You still think we're going back to normal? When it wasn't clear that the way to stop an infectious disease was to stop a society. They're pretending it's clear that what they did was the right thing, despite the evidence that shows the lockdowns are catastrophically causing more damage. And the very idea was horrifying and unimaginable. Why? Because they destroyed your life based on false information. He says, of course, we knew it was possible that social distancing could control a respiratory virus, according to Neil Ferguson from the Imperial College that got it horribly wrong, whose math is now forever associated with the lockdown. But there is an enormous cost associated with it. Yeah, Neil, we know that. You don't seem to care about that, though. As we're patting you on the wrist for false information, he got it mostly right. Mostly right means nothing when you destroyed everyone's lives. He's just a tool. He's a cog in the deception machine. But he's a part of it that you shouldn't ignore. It's all an illusion based on this. It really is. Here is another great research article from the PDMJ.org. Lockdowns failed to reduce deaths in the United States. Total deaths declined more from previous years in free states than in lockdown states. I love that, free states, because that's what they are. Ones that didn't force their people in lockdown. But the conclusion says, because the free states did not have increased deaths from their data in previous years, but their neighboring locked states with similar population density did average increased deaths over the free states from their data in previous years by a factor that stayed within the narrow range of 1.08 to 1.11 through the 5 weeks that included both peak COVID-19 mortality and included the end of and the easing of lockdown, it can be concluded, therefore, with certainty that lockdowns did not reduce the deaths in the United States. Yeah, who cares about the facts and the science, though, right? Listen to Neil Ferguson, because he knows. In fact, free states had decreased deaths from their data from previous years, but lockdown states, on average, did not have decreased deaths from their data in previous years. It was worse. I said this from the beginning. We saw an obvious spike the moment the lockdowns began. In every place that started lockdowns, you saw an increase directly after that. Correlation is not causation, but things need to begin to add up. Now, you can read more of this for yourself. It's quite clear what they're saying. But despite that, don't worry. Sacramento region is continuing their, not just their lockdown, but their stay-at-home order. You know, that thing they said would never happen. Conspiracy theory, right? Now you can't even leave your house. Oh, it's only because, as they say, the ICU capacity drops. Now, this is a crazy illusion. Because this does not directly translate into deaths or even severity. The point is that people are being rushed in because they are told they're sick. Or maybe there's other things going on. The point is that this is not a factor that should be used to shut down people's lives. Especially since they're not actually at risk. According to the CDC data. The vast majority of them. But the point is, the lockdowns will continue and they're still destroying your business and your life. If your business is even still there. As Luke points out, absolutely evil. You can see IRS plans a 50% ramp up in audits of small businesses. Why in the world would that make sense? Trump is still president. This is happening during his administration. Anybody want to explain why the IRS would ramp up audits of small? They should be auditing big businesses that just stole all of your money. That stole money that was supposed to go to small businesses. But no, they're going to increase their aggressive actions against you because you were always the target. As Luke rightly points out, this is why all big box stores are allowed to be open that barely pay any taxes. But they're going to go ahead and go after you to make sure you're paying your dues. It's just really disgusting how obviously they don't care about us, but they want you to think they do. And as Aaron points out, Wall Street soared in 2020 as millions were hungry or out of work. But that's okay, though, because we have breadlines, though. Don't worry, they'll have bread for you. Breadlines stretch across America. This economic collapse is much worse than you're being told. Because they're hiding it from you. Because they do not tell you the truth. The economic collapse of 2020 has undeniably widened the wealth gap. Now, our country is essentially divided between those who patiently wait for some food and breadlines after losing their ability to provide for themselves and oftentimes the roof over their heads, and those who sit comfortably at their homes waiting for the meltdown to be over while discovering the joys of baking bread. Very well put. That's disgusting. And the reality is, it's people like the Pelosi's and the Newsom's out there that are wielding all the power while not following even their own rules and are not at risk of suffering any of the problems that you're dealing with right now. Pretty sickening. But to end, thank you, Maria, for sharing this great clip. We need to realize how obviously our media is manipulated by the government. And that is why we're seeing an illusion from top to bottom controlling your perception. It just cannot be any more clear. And I'm really hoping that people will continue to fight for the truth. I mean, even in this chat, as we go through today, you know, there are going to be people that try to come in and say, look at this or look at that and manipulate your perception. But you guys are smarter than that. That's why you're here. And I don't mean because you're listening to this show, because you're here and because you're over there and because you're everywhere, because you're watching content, you're researching for yourself, and you're thinking about it. You're not just picking somebody who says they're right and just going, well, I'm just going to trust that guy. I would argue I've got one of the smartest audiences on any of these platforms because, and again, it's not because me, it's because you guys are smart, because you are seeking out information that you can research for yourself. It's just crazy that that is somehow exceptional today when it should be the commonplace. But thank you for being here, as always. Inspires me every single day to keep going that you're here and that you continue to support this channel. Because there's nothing other than personal support from you that keeps this channel alive. That's it. I don't have advertisers. I don't have anything. I mean, I would argue you won't find, I mean, I don't even know of any other platform that does that. That's only completely run by personal donations from people that support the channel. Period. It's just, that in and of itself inspires me. Now, for instance, I'm wearing the Question Everything t-shirt. The shirts are made by another alternative platform. They ship these things out of their garage. That's what we're about. So thank you for being here, and thank you for continuing to question everything and continuing to think for yourself. Now spread the information, get it out there, and make sure people ask questions. Now, I'm going to continue to talk about this stuff, and I'm going to continue to put out these interviews that are coming very soon. Don't forget, I actually don't even think I've told you this yet. Brian, After Hours Live, Brian Richmond, is going to be going down on January 6th to film and observe and interview during the whole electors fiasco and whatever's going to ultimately happen. He's going down there on behalf of The Last American Vagabond. So he'll be there interviewing and doing, we'll probably be cutting in live and doing stuff while I'm live, and we'll be, you know, whether there's protests or chaos or, you know, some crazy thing that happens, Brian will be there getting it on film, and we'll try to get you live so you can see it for yourself. That's what we're all about, guys. We're here to bring you the facts and the information for you to digest for yourselves. Crazy. Thank you for being here, guys. I love you. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
There are other functions, however, some of them more legitimate than others. One is to run secret wars. The covert action that's written and talked about so much, like what's happening in Nicaragua today from Honduras. Another thing is to disseminate propaganda to influence people's minds. And this is a major function of the CIA. And unfortunately, of course, it overlaps into the gathering of information. You have contact with a journalist, you will give him true stories, you'll get information from him, you'll also give him false stories.
Did you do buy his confidence with true stories?
You buy his confidence and set him up. We've seen this happen in, recently with Jack Anderson, for example, who has his intelligence sources, and he has also admitted that he's been set up by him. You know, every fifth story just simply being false. You also work on their human vulnerabilities to recruit them in a classic sense, to make them your agent so that you can control what they do, so you don't have to set them up sort of, you know, by putting one over on them. So you can say, here, plant this one next Tuesday.
Can you do this with responsible reporters?
Yes, the Church Committee brought it out in 1975, and then Woodward and Bernstein put an article in Rolling Stone a couple of years later. 400 journalists cooperating with the CIA, including some of the biggest names in the business, to consciously introduce the stories into the press.
Well, give me a concrete example of how you use the press this way, how a false story is planted and how you got it published.
Well, for example, in my war, the Angola war that I helped to manage, one-third of my staff was propaganda. Ironically, it's called covert action inside the CIA. Outside, that means the violent part. I had propagandists all over the world, principally in London, Kinshasa, and Zambia. We would take stories which we would write and put them in the Zambia Times, and then pull them out and send them to a journalist on our payroll in Europe. But his cover story, you see, would be that he'd gotten them from his stringer in Lusaka, who had gotten them from the Zambia Times. We had the complicity of the government of Zambia, Kenneth Kaunda, if you will, to put these false stories into his newspapers. But after that point, the journalists, Reuters and AFP, the management was not witting of it. Now, our contact man in Europe was. And we pumped just dozens of stories about Cuban atrocities, Cuban rapists. In one case, we had the Cuban rapists caught and tried by the Ovimbundu maidens who had been their victims. And then we ran photographs that made almost every newspaper in the country of the Cubans being executed by the Ovimbundu women who supposedly had been their victims.
But these were fake photos?
Oh, absolutely. We didn't know of one single atrocity committed by the Cubans. It was pure, raw, false propaganda to create an illusion of communists, you know, eating babies for breakfast and that sort of totally false propaganda.